Blog Talk Radio.
Are you ready? Let's go!
Now, from the IMLD home studios, in its ninth season, you are listening to In Much Less Detail, the podcast, where we cut through the noise and give you your NFL breakdown in much less detail. Your football party is live with your hosts, Jay and Dre.
Hey, welcome in. You've got In Much Less Detail, the podcast. We are here with you live with our football party on Saturday night, October the 2nd, 2021. Welcome into October already. I'm Dre. He's Jay. We've got your week four picks coming up later on. All 15 games that are remaining on the schedule. We will have all those picks against the spread. We will review last week and that crazy action in week three. But first, Jay, if anyone was listening to the podcast version, you were talking about your family and what you guys are going through up there concerning the pandemic. So definitely give an update on what's going on there.
Yeah, no, the Cute Factor, the original, the OG Cute Factor came down with the COVID, and that was confirmed last week she went in for the test. So I wasn't on the show. She went in Saturday morning for the test. We got the results, first thing on Monday that she got the goop, and, she's back in school already. Can you believe it, on Monday?
Wow.
But yeah, she's mostly, I'd say mostly better. I'd say, it never really hit her more than just a really severe cold. So that was pretty much from Thursday through about Tuesday, where she was just, stuffy and tired and out of breath easily. And we just had her relax. I walked over to the school, picked up both my kids' school books, because Grant can't go to school now till Friday this week coming up, because he was obviously a close contact. My wife can't go back to work for like two more weeks, and I already went back to work today. So if that goes to show you that they actually have no clue how this is being managed, that's it right there in a nutshell for you. That four different people in the same house are all going to be basically like back out on four different days. And me, I'm the first one back.
All right. Well, but so, that's because none of you guys tested positive.
Right. No, but I just my wife's work is following the Department of Health, stuff to the letter, where it's basically you have to quarantine for 10 days after the person who got it, who lives in your house, their quarantine ends. You have to now then quarantine for an additional 10 days.
An extra. Mm-hmm.
Where my work just treated it like I was the one who got it. And so me and Trin, so Trin is going to be back out in the wild before her brother or my wife, which is the whole thing is it just leaves you scratching your head trying to make sense of the rules and how you end up with one household with one person who gets coronavirus, but four different people with four different dates as far as when they can go back to doing things. It made no sense. It makes no sense to me. Like if it feels sort of kind of slapdash, it is.
It sounds slapdash. Yeah. As I was telling you last week, that our situation in my house was that I got it and my wife didn't come down and start feeling symptoms till maybe 4, 5, 6 days after I started feeling my symptoms. So for anyone to say, you had a person in your house that got it, but it's a week later. Yeah, come on back to work. You're good.
Yeah, I'm basically only 4 days removed from what I still consider to be one of my daughter's most symptomatic days. And they're like, it'll be fine. Come back to work.
Okay.
even though by the letter of everything, I could still all of a sudden come down with it in the next week.
Sure.
But so far, though, I mean, I took the at-home test because I haven't really had symptoms. I've just had allergies and stuff, but I deal with that all the time. So it's like nothing outside the ordinary for me. I took the at-home test. I was negative. And on the negative side, apparently those at-home tests are like rock solid. Like they don't really get false negatives on those. It's like 99% accurate on the negative side. But they do have a little higher instance of false positives. But no, I tested, and then my wife and son both actually went and got the official tests, and they both came up negative. So, knock on wood, out of the woods here.
Yeah, all our fingers and toes are crossed and hoping that everything stays as it is and everyone continues to be asymptomatic and testing negative. And it's hard to imagine with one person and that actually has it, but that's how crazy it is that it can,
it
can be passed on or it might not be.
Yeah. And they send you all this guidance about how to isolate the person away. And I'm like, you know, it makes it really hard when it's a 9-year-old.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I'm not going to, like, we weren't going to be like, going to lock my daughter in her room, you know, so we pretty much figured, like, hey, you know what? We get it. We're not going to, chances were pretty good if we had it. We already had it. Not that we were going to get it from anything different, you know. So we didn't, obviously, we weren't walking around, you know, licking her doorknob and, you know, like, you know, hugging her a lot or any of that, but we weren't, like, shunning her either, you know.
I completely get that. If it was my daughter, I would not be throwing, you know, McDonald's bags in her room and running away.
Yeah, that's what happened last year when they thought I had it, when I had to go get tested. Yeah. That was last year in June. Yeah, I had no problem being, like, sequestered away. You know, it didn't hurt my feelings, but you can't do that to a little kid.
Yeah, it'd be tough. It'd be really tough.
Yeah. So, yeah, right? It's easier with adults. Like, adults can understand it. They can manage it. They know it's not personal. I don't know if kids have that same capacity. Like all of a sudden it's like, you know, well, mommy and daddy aren't, you know, anywhere near me or they're making me eat in a different room. You know, that so we didn't do that. We were careful, you know, lots of hand washing, showers almost, you know, like every day for both of them. You know, just making sure, you know, they went outside, they got dirty. Yep, go get in the shower right away. You know, normally when you're 7 or when you're 9, I can remember it wasn't that way. It wasn't like every time you got like near dirt, you had to go in. But no, we tried to make sure. We actually being home, all four of us, for a week and a half. A lot of house cleaning was getting done too.
Right.
So just trying to keep you washing her blankets, washing her pillowcase, just trying to do as best we can without making her feel like a pariah.
Yeah.
So.
Well.
Yeah.
Something that so many of us have had to deal with. Unfortunately, it finally got to you guys. But again, just best wishes and prayers up, and hoping that everything stays as not serious as it has been. It has not been a serious case, and it's not going to become one. You said she's already feeling better, so and already going back to school.
Yes, already back in school on Monday. You know, so that's nice. I'm sure I know she's excited to get back to just, you know, today she was out in the yard running around. It wasn't, you know, she was actually being like a normal kid, not like out of breath, you know, after doing the most menial task. So I know we had talked about a little bit real quickly because I said that it was kind of, this was like going kind of like through my kid's school, like kind of like wildfire through their grades.
Mm-hmm.
But my daughter's notification that we got from the school is the last one that we've gotten from either class, which means that we're, you know, a week and a half now where we were getting like 1 to 2 of them a day with these emails about kids. So maybe this little wave of whatever ran through the school real quick, making its way out.
Certainly hope so, and that some of the numbers are starting to come down. I was seeing on the news, so yeah, this...
Well, yeah. It was like Wisconsin. We spiked really. We were like fine through most of August, and then we spiked obviously once college and schools and everything kind of started back up again. And once that all sort of, so we hit a number. You know, like we hit a number way higher than we had hit for the whole summer, and now that's starting to. So I'm thinking it must have just been, you know, it did its course, and now it's the numbers are starting to moderate again here, which is good.
Yeah, it was the same spike that happened here in Tennessee at the end of August.
Yeah.
That's the only difference is they start school so much earlier down here in the South for whatever reason. So.
Yeah. Well, yeah, but you had all this college football, all that stuff kicked back in. All these kids were going back to school, and you had these cases all kind of sort of just like rushed through. And now it's been quiet again. So we're just hoping that continues. And if there's anything for having it and having any kind of immunity, here's hoping for Trin that, she's less susceptible to getting it again.
Right. Definitely some antibody action going on there. My doctor was saying that they don't know exactly how long it lasts, but it's a good while. It's not forever, obviously. You know, some of these NBA players acting like it's forever.
Yeah, your body's used to fighting stuff off when you're 9.
Mm-hmm.
When you're old like us, you got to watch out.
Well, I'm just shaking my head at some of these NBA players that are, they're not old like us. They're not kids.
Yeah.
But they're acting like, well, I had it and it was, 6-7 months ago, so I'm still good. No, idiot. No, it doesn't work like that. All these guys trying to avoid the vaccine and coming up with these different reasons and religious exemptions and everything. And it's going to come to a head. Like the NFL had their situation before the season began, trying to get as many guys vaccinated as possible. And the ones that want to comply or sort of, let them know, here's the rules. Here's what's going to happen. If there's a breakout because of you, we trace it back to you and you're not vaccinated, that's, all on you, and the team's going to forfeit and all of that. And the NBA is probably going to come up with some drastic measures just like that. Actually, it's going to be where these cities that have indoor mandates that you have to be vaccinated to be, playing indoors. So guys like, for instance, Kyrie Irving on the Brooklyn Nets, Brooklyn having an indoor vaccination mandate, until he gets vaccinated, he's not going to be able to play home games. Like, he's going to severely cripple his team by not being eligible to play just because he refuses to get this free vaccine that's safe. And it just doesn't make any sense. It will never make sense to me. I do not understand it. So, yeah, it's still going on. It's coming down a little bit, but it's still going. So hopefully we can finally turn the corner as 2022 approaches and get on with all of this.
2 weeks, man. 2 weeks. It's all it takes.
Week 3 in the NFL last week. It was a lot. It was a lot of stuff that happened. It was a lot of action. I think the game that everyone talked about that stood out to everybody was, of course, the Buccaneers and the Rams. And Tommy going out to L.A. and Matthew Stafford and the Rams showing them, hey, we're here. We're the new kids as far as, McVay and Stafford, that union, they're in their honeymoon phase, that's for sure. It's all lovey-dovey and everything's all good right now. And, of course, beating the defending champions and looking good while doing it, that's going to be a big mark. Makes me feel great, of course, picking the Rams as my NFC champion. So I don't know what stood out about that game to you, but I like pretty much everything about it. I like the way the Rams showed up and the way they fought back, because Tampa Bay and Tuami, they're going to have their moments, but the Rams stood up and punched them right back in the mouth.
Yeah, it was interesting. Tampa Bay. I mean, we both had the Rams in this one, so we didn't. We didn't have any love for Tampa going into this spot here. No Antonio Brown, little beat up in the secondary, and it kind of showed. Matthew Stafford, he went to work. He did a nice job against them. Tom Brady in the second half. That was some Dak time going on in that game. I think you could really see, the Rams were obviously trying to get that pressure up front. They did get a few, several sacks on Brady. It looks like, 1, 2, 3 sacks I'm seeing for the day. So that was, they were definitely getting the pressure. We talked about that, a team that can get pressure on Brady up the middle with 4 always has a chance, because that allows you to drop more guys into coverage. And, you don't give a quarterback, you don't give any quarterback, I don't care how good he is, a ample amount of time to throw the ball. He becomes very human really quick. And in the meantime, while that was all going on, they completely bottled up the running game of Tampa too. Like they weren't going to let Tampa. They refused to allow them to run on them. Tom Brady was the leading rusher, which is
You're not going to win that, with Tom Brady as your leading rusher.
If you look at any stat sheet and you see a Tampa Bay versus whoever, and you don't look at the score and just look at that rushing stat. If you see Tom Brady was the leading rusher with 14 yards rushing, just put all your money on the fact that Tampa lost the game. So yeah, and Stafford and McVay, they were every bit of it. They didn't abandon the run. They weren't overly productive in the running game. Obviously, Tampa's impossible virtually to compile a lot of stats on in the running game, but because that offense of the Rams is all predicated on that play action, you got to at least pretend like you're going to run the football. And obviously play action doesn't work if every once in a while you don't actually just give the ball to the running back. So even though they weren't great gains that they were getting in the running game, they still ran it enough to keep Tampa honest enough that play action could work. And DeSean Jackson found the fountain of youth.
He does that every two years. He has a long bomb for a touchdown.
He has one route.
Correct.
Just go deep. The fly route. The go route, whatever you want to call it. That's all DeSean Jackson pretty much runs. And they tried it at one point early in the game, and it didn't. And they missed on it, and then they went right back to it in the second half. And that was the one that sort of just the dagger.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that really pointed out, I think, the big crippling effect on Tampa Bay right now, which is their back end, their secondary beat up, and Matthew Stafford exploited it greatly with DeSean Jackson, with Cooper Kupp, with Tyler Higbee even. That's all they did. You pointed it out. All they did was run enough to fool Tampa Bay into thinking that they might be committed to running so that they could set up play action. And Stafford just kept burning him over and over again, and had a huge day. But yeah, you got to look at the Tampa Bay injuries in their secondary. Bucks are beat up. There's no doubt about it. And then the Rams took advantage of that. You can only play who's in front of you. No excuses, but definitely it's not the same Buccaneers defense that we saw last year. Obviously, that took them all the way to the championship. They've staggered a little bit. They've stuttered. And until they fix that, it's definitely a different team. And Brady tried, like I said, to hang in there and bring the Bucs back. But, yeah, they were beating them up a little bit. They were making them, as we talk about, they're making them rush a little bit. He doesn't like to be rushed. No quarterback really does. But and he, like you said, he had to break the pocket and do a little running just to escape some of that pressure, and he winds up the leading rusher on the day for Tampa Bay, which is definitely not what you want to see.
No. No. Yeah, that you take out Tom Brady's three scrambles, and they ran for 21 yards outside of Tom Brady.
That's not going to get it done. I was thrilled for the effort for the Rams.
Yeah, and you think back to last year, because we talk about this historic run and this great defense of Tampa. They didn't really come together and go on that run until about three quarters of the way through, when they seemed to just kind of figure it all out, and then they just went on that tear through the playoffs. So, yeah, it's week three, so I'm not going to be like, this is not my radar. It's like, oh, watch out, that Tampa defense. It's trash, or it's not going to be what it was. You're seeing this, again, after 3 weeks, there's some teams that were really good on defense last year, like Washington. Washington's been brutal on defense. Mm-hmm. Tampa's back end looks really bad. It's the longest season ever. In this spot, though, with this matchup, with those injuries, I think that's why we were both on the Rams. I think we were kind of hoping to kind of catch the other one sleeping and have, That felt like one of those picks where we both thought we were the smartest guy, and then we were like, oh, damn it, he had that.
Ah, he had it too. Damn it.
Yeah.
And it looked, close. It was only 14-7 at the half, so it took a while for the Rams to put it together.
Yeah. 75-yard bomb.
Deshaun bomb.
And that was, yeah, and it was over. That was pretty much ball game at that point. Yeah, Tampa Bay got it close on the next drive, and then, you know, another touchdown. You go, yeah, it started to get out of hand. And then even that last touchdown that they got for Tampa Bay, was that time. That's all it was. That defense wasn't playing at the same intensity, you know, at 34-17 as they were, you know, when it was like crunch time.
Now, Tampa answered that first touchdown at the third quarter, so it was a roller coaster. It looked like it was going to be, you know, back and forth, break out the circus music, but Tampa could not get to Stafford. The pressure could not get to Matt Stafford and make him rush and do anything he didn't want to do, and the pressure did get to Brady eventually, and that made the difference. And Stafford not having any pressure and exploiting the back end after Jamel Dean gets hurt. You already had John Murphy Bunting hurt. It got ugly quickly after that. So,
yeah.
But it's only one game, but Tampa looked like they have some real issues to try to figure out, and they're going to come right back this week and try to figure them out in this game tomorrow night. I don't know if you've heard, but there's a pretty big game tomorrow night in New England.
I heard about that, yeah. Oh, and it's on Sunday night, so... Oh,
yeah,
it's gonna be, man. Get the hip boots on. It's gonna get deep.
Yeah.
Even the promos for it last Sunday night were nauseating.
Right, the week before they were already hyping it. It's like
the return. It's like, was this, is it Jesus?
Yes, haven't you heard? Come on.
Oh man. So there was another game on the calendar last week that we both thought we were going to be the smartest guy in the room on. And I think we were both kind of mad at each other because we each kind of aped each other's pick to switch gears here a little bit. Not the way you think I'm going here, but we both had the Lions to cover that number at home against Baltimore. And they dang near won that thing. Like, and that was just so Ravens, wasn't it?
It sure was. Oh my gosh. They tried to lose that game so hard. They really did. Hollywood Brown refused to catch touchdowns. Refused. Several of them.
Dropped everything. He had two touchdowns. And then I'm with Dan Campbell. When I was watching that, I was on Red Zone. I was like, glory. It was the one good thing about being home last Sunday was I had the Red Zone on my home TV for the whole day. And I'm watching the end of that game. And, oh, man, they totally blew that delay call. Oh man, that was painfully late, and they allowed that to go on. And yeah, that should have taken them back to 5 yards, and that should have been it. You know, and then Justin Tucker bangs that 66-yarder off the crossbar and over, and just, you know, sort of that miraculous finish. But Baltimore, all those players. They collected those game checks with a mask and a gun because that was
totally stole that win.
Awful.
Totally. They need to thank the referees on the way out. They need to give them a cut.
Yeah.
Slip them something on the side for looking down and looking up at the clock and looking back down and then looking back up. Yeah, they really went through all the mechanics of you're supposed to call those delay of games. And I don't care what you say about the mechanics. That is not how it's supposed to go. You're not supposed to let another 2 seconds go after the clock hits zero, sitting there wondering, did the clock hit zero and has the ball been snapped yet? It's supposed to be a lot quicker than that.
The way they say they're supposed to be doing is that back judge is watching the double zero, and as soon as he sees the double zero, he looks down at the ball, and if the ball's not snapped, he throws the flag.
It's supposed to be like that, but... 2 seconds isn't supposed to pass in that time period. When he must have had like something in his eye and was just blinking and trying to get in between looking at the zero and looking at the ball because he never made it.
He's like, no way I'm throwing this flag at the end of this, you know. No way am I, right? I'm not going to be that guy. But it was, I'm with the Lions on this one. It's a joke franchise, but, you know, they're trying. They might be the tryhards now. You remember we were talking about the Giants, they were the try-hard team. I think the Lions this year might just be that try-hard team because they're really trying. I'll give them credit. They haven't quit. They're not hashtag full of quit. They're bad.
I hope they haven't quit after 3 games.
Wait, we had a team a few years ago. Remember that when we had that was that the Eagles I had that one year who quit before the season even started and was and nailed it, where we actually had a mail-in team before the season even started?
Yeah.
No, so but that was another one that annoyed me, because I was just for sure we were going to be against each other on that one.
No, oh, yeah, because I had the Ravens for the big upset in Kansas City the week before. And, yeah, I'm sure you did think, oh, yeah, Ravens all the way. They're going to go, you know, undefeated the rest of the year. No, this is how the Ravens do things, unfortunately.
Yes.
This is more.
We've been doing this long enough. So you get the Ravens come off a big emotional primetime win like that, they're going to do this, exactly this, and should have lost that game.
Yeah, they deserve that again, because that's exactly what they did. They did not play the way they're supposed to. And again, the Hollywood Brown had so many touchdowns too, that would have covered the number if you'd have caught just one of them. And that's what the Ravens do. They find a way. They find a way to pull those games out, and really should have pulled a whole loss out, should have pulled an L for the entire game straight up from that situation, if not for Justin Tucker and the golden leg of God there. But the whole point of Dan Campbell and the ankle biters and the knee biters and all that crap that he was talking about in the preseason is that the effort's going to be there. If they have nothing else in Detroit all year because of the ankle biter coach there, they're going to have the effort. So, that's the new try-hard team, and that's what they want to be. That's what they set out to be, their meathead coach, and that's why I kind of laugh at them. But they covered.
You know, yeah, that's true. It would have won you money if you had money on it. But you got also got to think, they're looking up at the Packers, the Vikings. It's debatable if they're looking up at the Bears. But this isn't the Lions aren't going to the playoffs, right? So what is this? This is one of those like kind of culture building years, right? You got to start to. You're not going to win many games, but at least don't get embarrassed, right? Don't just go out there and be a laughingstock. And I'll give them credit. That's a vastly superior team that they played, and they took them to the wire. So, hey, good for those guys.
So now time to give credit to the man, Justin Tucker. 66 yards.
NFL record.
NFL record to win the game off the crossbar. And of course, we both know what we refer to in our minds when we saw it hit the crossbar and fall forward and go in, because – way back in the day when we were kids, we noticed something about a certain Duke basketball player that really
was that the alley-oop?
Yeah, he really liked to hit the front of the rim and bounce his free throws in forward, and don't know how he did that, but shout out to Ala Abdul Nabi, wherever he is. He's actually like a college, not a college,
front
but
of the,
a color commentator
front of the rim,
somewhere.
Backboard and in every time.
With the most consistency you could ever believe. It seemed like every time we watched a Duke game, he was hitting every free throw in that
thing. He took that to the pros, too. Was that with Portland?
Yeah, that's right, Portland Trailblazer.
The alley-oop.
That field goal was the alley-oop.
Probably the only time we might be the only people who have ever actually given a free throw a nickname.
Something we coined, 30-some years ago.
The alley-oop.
So, unbelievable kick. We don't have too much Hall of Fame talk around here because we make fun of the Hall of Fame and all of its silly rules. But that's a motherfucking Hall of Famer right there, Justin Tucker. There's a place kicker in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
He's going to be it.
Vinatieri. That was on the same day that Matt Prater tried the 69-yard field goal and ended up being
just
a touchdown. And it'll be the touchdown going the other way. So he had a 109-yard touchdown play and a 66-yard field goal. Would have been even better if they were in the same game.
Well, that would have broken every special teams coach's brain if that was in the same
crazy
game.
Crazy plays. But we've managed to make it 29 minutes into the show. I just
ain't got nothing
to
say, man.
I just got to ask you one question.
I ain't got nothing to say about it.
How's that Kool-Aid tasting, man?
A little sour. Just a bit.
A little sour apple? Or is that sour grape?
I don't even know what to say. I don't even look.
I know Danielle Sargent knows what to say. that's about the only person who knows what to say.
Well, good. I'm glad somebody knows what to say, because I sure the hell.
What? The game 72-71.
I mean, okay. Public service announcement for Justin Fields. I do have this to say to directly to Fields, if you're listening. Young man, your coaches and your front office, your GM, they're not going to be around much longer. So
right.
Keep your head up. It's one game. It's a hell of a terrible debut, but it's going to be a story you get to tell your children and your grandchildren about someday. This is not going to last forever. This too shall pass. Your franchise had a coach that once said that the coach is just one of those things. It's one game. But in the future, just a little free advice. You might want to run away from Myles Garrett. He's kind of fast.
I heard he's good.
Now, so, and
do you put that on Fields?
Some people
I know that people in the media, especially that Chicago media, they're just done. They're at the point now with Matt Nagy that you were at last year before mm-hmm. the smoke and mirrors finished to get into the playoffs. That we all knew
Please.
Was fake.
Complete.
We all knew it was fake. But how do you pass for 68 yards and end up with a net of one?
That's really difficult to do.
You took 67 yards in sacks. Think about that.
So I can't
say... That's
a
Justin Tucker field goal, just in sacks.
I can't say that it's all on Nagy as much as I'm through with Nagy. Yeah, I've been with him and Peyton.
Now I'm done.
For a long time now. That's not all on him, and it's not all on Fields. It might be sound like a cop-out answer, but it's be both of them, because one of the reasons I picked Chicago in that game was specifically because Justin Fields had the athletic ability to get away from all those guys coming at him, and he didn't do it. Now, it's his first NFL start, so of yep. course it's understandable that he didn't quite know how to get away, what to do.
It's because that's everybody was coming for him.
It wasn't just Miles. It was everybody.
No,
yeah,
that was nine sacks.
The Chicago O-line has been lacking, and everybody knows that. So, yes, it's partly on Fields for not using his athleticism and getting away, but it's got to be partly coaching as well for not designing something, anything, to get him in a better position to. You're not going to win the game, but get him in a better position to survive. Because he looked like, an eighth grader out there trying to play in the NFL. He had no chance. And I'm so glad I wasn't watching live because
Ooh,
it would have been
bad.
I would have been
brutal.
Throwing things at the television.
And just the fact that Cleveland, not that far removed from being their own joke of a franchise, that Cleveland had such disrespect for that Bears offense early in that game. Cleveland was so arrogant with the ball. They just kept going for it on fourth downs at like midfield, and the Bears kept stopping them. So basically the Bears keep getting all this like prime field position, and it was just time after time after time, and they got out of that was 3 points.
68 yards passing is
the Browns had
such a
zero
joke.
Respect for that. And I'm not talking a lot about Cleveland because they didn't really have to do much in this game other than just sack the hell out of Justin Fields. that if you think you learned anything about Cleveland in this game, you didn't. I had Cleveland in this game. I didn't know it was going to be that. That was just
ugliest games you could ever imagine.
Yeah. I mean, we joke about that Colin Kaepernick start that he had in Chicago. I believe that was the Matt Barkley game.
Mm-hmm.
Where he ended up with like negative net yards passing before they finally yanked him in the fourth quarter. Cause that was like, that Justin Fields start, that's all time. That's up there with some of those Andy Dalton Thursday night starts.
Ah.
And that Kaepernick start. I mean, you can't have your first NFL start one net yard passing. Six completions.
Any offensive guru coach has their quarterback in better position than that.
The guy you wanted. This is the guy you wanted. Your guy is getting destroyed out there You're not rolling them out of the pocket. You're not throwing screens. I mean, you're not using the rush against them at all. You had they literally had nothing against Cleveland. They ran the exact same offense. If that was Andy Dalton, same result. Maybe worse.
Probably worse, yeah.
Yeah. If that was Andy Dalton, they would have still had Justin Fields in the game because they probably would have murdered Dalton.
Then Dalton wouldn't have got up after
but
the
again,
fourth or fifth one.
I believe I have just been saying since week one, why is he even if he's a project, why isn't Nick Foles starting this game? Why are you letting this kid go out there and get sat on by Myles Garrett?
Because they have no plan, because they have no clue. That's why.
You would be correct on that one.
God. I was watching the highlights come across, you know, in the afternoon between games.
Bad.
And I'm like, why did they even go out there? Why did they play the game if that's what they were going to do? Why? But again,
yeah.
I'll say Fields at some point has to realize, son, you're on an island. You have no backup. You need to take control of the situation and do better for yourself, just for yourself, just for your own stats or your own peace of mind.
I liked the joke tweets that were all being put out this weekend that said Mitch Trubisky took that Matt Nagy offense to the playoffs twice. He's the GOAT.
Pretty much.
You know, I actually got to chuckle a lot.
You look at that.
I kept seeing that tweet.
Hey!
Yeah, I'm not the one who posted that, but I kept seeing variations of that all week that people were realizing, like, wait a minute, Trubisky got this team to the playoffs twice? Might be the greatest quarterback of all time.
Well, and for those who watched the Bears games with Trubisky, he had some games where he looked like he was going to be that damn good. Like,
yeah.
He had some games where he was awesome looking. He never, yeah. And he had some games where he looked like that, too. So that's why he got ran out of town. But the point is, you take this kid Fields now, who's supposed to be, you know, the better version of Trubisky, and
yeah.
that's the Bears. So yeah.
And we tried to warn. Speaking of rookie quarterbacks, we tried to warn our caller last week about
Lou?
This Lou in Jersey. We were trying to warn him about what was going to happen in Denver, and.
What I just don't understand is expectations. That he expected the Jets to be better than this. Why?
They managed exactly goose. They put up the goose.
A squadoosh.
I mean, that's not even participation trophy time. That was really awful. Awful play from the Jets. They're going to be drafting really high again. I know that. They're bad.
And as we discussed, with those next few years of high draft picks, maybe they can get some other players to surround poor Zach and give him some help. Because right now he might be terrible, but we don't know because he has nobody around him. Kind of like Fields, to be honest.
Yeah, well, Denver got to him five times. So Denver did sack him five times. Zach Wilson did manage 19 completions, but he threw two picks, which has also been a problem.
To have completions to the team with the other colors on.
Yeah. So, like I said, catchable ball. Best thing I can say about him. And Denver, again, if you think you learned anything about Denver – you didn't, because that was Denver's defense basically just taking complete advantage of an inept offense and turning them over, getting a lot of punts, and then, you know, a semi-competent offense is going to be able to produce in that type of situation. So, yeah, 26-0. Ouch.
Yeah, congrats to the Broncos and the Panthers for doing what they're supposed to do, and now their schedules start to feature actual NFL teams, so we'll see how they handle that. Because so far, it hasn't.
Right. Carolina, because that was the Thursday night game last week. But, yeah, the undefeated Panthers, undefeated Broncos. And, yeah, are they beating some cream puffs? Yeah, I mean, Carolina has a quality win. They beat the Saints. but Denver now, you know, Denver's sitting there, you know, beating their chest to 3-0. You still play in a division with the Chargers and the Chiefs.
Well,
speaking of the Chargers and the Chiefs,
437 yards of offense.
That was a sunning. A sunning, remember? You called the sunning.
I did, and I was dead wrong on that. We've got some geniusness last week. We're both 11-5 against the spread, which is damn good. But
yeah.
We had some clunkers among those five, that's for sure.
Yes, we did. Yeah, we managed to I predicted that we would go 4-4 into the weekend, and we sure did.
Oh, man, I meant to look up and get the Bill Alfonso sound right down the middle, Dad.
Right?
I don't...
down the middle. Exactly. Where, yeah, no.
But I
don't know if I expected the Chargers to win.
Yeah, that was definitely a
surprise. I thought they'd put up a fight, but, you know, yeah, I think we're in for a lot of this over the next decade. What do you think?
Bryce in Brooklyn thought that last year, so apparently
he was
way ahead of the curve on that.
Yeah, he had already he went full Denny Green. I mean, he crowned him. I mean, he was on. I gotta say, he was on Justin Herbert being, you know, before it was cool, you know. So hipster, hipster Bryce nailing the Herbert love, but also doing it. They come from behind. They do it in the fourth quarter, and Kansas City. I don't know what that was because they were just in the first half of that game. They were just turnover machines.
Right. That's what killed them. Four turnovers, like. 437 yards of offense is typical Chiefs output.
Yeah.
They didn't that was the Chiefs. That was just the Chiefs trying to fight and battle, turning it over to the other team so many times. Like, you're not going to – no matter how many yards of offense you get, you're probably going to lose the game when you give it away four times to the other team.
Yeah.
So.
No, and this is where I give the Chargers credit is Kansas City does this all the time. They get down – They look like crap in the first half. I mean, you know, it's 14-3 at halftime that the Chargers are up, and you just know it's coming, right? You know that it's like, oh, got them right where they want them. And sure enough, the Chiefs come back. They take the lead, and the Chargers didn't wilt, and a lot of teams have. And so that's where I give them a lot of credit. And Justin Herbert just kept making big throw after big throw. Yeah, he definitely has a connection with Mike Williams, that number two receiver, because, you know, Keenan Allen's the obvious, his go-to guy. Like, if it's third down, he's looking for Keenan Allen. And more often than not, Keenan Allen's open, which is shocking. You know, not a guy who gets a lot of, you know, publicity with a receiver-heavy league. You know, you hear about all the guys like, you know, Diggs and Hopkins and the guys in Tennessee. Both are out this week, but, you know, those guys, and then nobody really talks a lot about Keenan Allen.
As you know, that's partially where he plays. And
yeah,
I
know. He's playing out there on the left coast.
If he was in New York, they'd be talking him up all the time. No, he's just a professional receiver, man. I'm a longtime fan of Keenan Allen.
But Mike Williams was coming up big in that game, too. So, if you know, yeah. Herbert seems like he might be one of those quarterbacks who gets mileage out of just guys, you know? I think he's got that. Like, Mahomes has got it, and Rodgers has got it. I'm not saying that Herbert's at that level yet, but he feels like he might be that kind of quarterback when you start seeing guys on the stat sheet like, who? You know?
And I think it's easier today more now than ever to be a quarterback like that, because I even saw a little bit of that out of Burrow watching the Bengals. Like, he was putting some balls. That's the Thursday
Wait,
night
are you talking
game.
About Thursday night?
Yeah.
You watched that game? I didn't watch a minute of that game.
I cussed you out on text for making me wanting to watch that game because you went against me. So I'm like, oh, fuck, now I got to watch this game.
All I know is it was 14-0 Jaguars, like, in a heartbeat. And of course, Cincinnati comes back and wins. So I'm pissed off because I'm like, you know what? The Bengals are not good enough yet to show up and think they're going to win. And I kind of got that vibe. Like the Bengals overlooked a team, and they're not good enough to overlook a team yet. But they're just barely good enough, and the Jaguars are bad enough that Cincinnati could come back and win that game.
Yeah, they're good enough to come back on the Jaguars. That's not really saying
the Jaguars
much.
Are good enough to yak up a lead.
Exactly. But just in that game, you know, I know I'm talking about a Week 4 game, but
it's okay.
Because you talked about Right. But you talked about a quarterback good enough to make, you know, stars and receptions out of guys that you have no idea who they are. And I saw a little bit of that in Burrow on that Thursday night game, because that's the difference. That's why the Bengals were able to come back and win, because as that game went on in the second half, Burrow was making, putting the ball in a place where Joe Blow could bring it in. It's right there. It's like a, you know, perfectly laid in ball. And there's more guys like that now than ever before. And it's easy. It's not easy, but it's easier yeah. now than ever before, because of the rules and because of the offensive innovations of the game, the formations and the way guys are able to get free and get, you can have quarterbacks. You have so many quarterbacks now in the league that can do that. That can just look, you know, make anyone look like a competent receiver because they have the ability to put that ball right where it needs to be. And that was the difference between Burrow and Trevor Lawrence. Trevor Lawrence doesn't know how to do that yet. He was not putting the ball where his guys needed in order to make plays and keep that lead, and that's what made the difference as far as losing that game. But they were still able to cover for me, so I'm happy about that.
Right.
But, yeah, Burrow and Herbert are definitely two examples of guys that are exactly what you're talking about, that they can just put the ball out there and let whoever, what fourth, fifth receiver, whoever you are, go out there and turn your head, and the ball's going to be right there. And unless you're Hollywood Brown, you're not going to just drop it and leave it all on the field.
So where I'm kicking myself now talking about Cincinnati was I even went to my Cincinnati corollary and then crapped all over it and took the Steelers anyways. And I hope Bryson Brooklyn – is it Bryson Brooklyn? He needs a wellness check, because
– we haven't heard from him in a while.
We haven't heard from him. And
the way the Steelers are playing,
you're
not going to hear from
him. I don't want to call him out as being a front runner, but he tends to call into the show when the Steelers are doing good. And then when the Steelers hit the big bumps in the road, he kind of disappears for a while.
Kind of radio silence out of Bryce. No,
yeah.
Hey, look,
so,
when you're that passionate of a fan and your team
yeah,
is doing this.
They take it hard.
Yeah, it's hard. It's difficult to watch, and it's difficult to call in and raise your ugly head. It's just – because, you know, what are you going to say? You're going to call in. If you do call in that state, you're going to sound like Lou in Jersey. You're just going to be, you know, cussing out your team and talking about, you know, God, they suck.
Those big expectations for the Jets.
Right.
Here.
No, you know, we love yeah. Lou, but you don't want to sound like Lou.
No. And statistically, Pittsburgh, they were all over the field. You know, Najee Harris ran for 100 yards. They did everything they were supposed to do. Ben threw for 300, but they still end up taking the L in that game, and it wasn't even like it was really close. I mean, that thing got out of hand. Roethlisberger throws two picks. Just not a pretty game at all for the Steelers, and I just wonder if there's time for them to kind of get this thing turned around, because you now have the Bengals at 3-1, the Ravens and the Browns. Oof. I wasn't high on Pittsburgh before the season started. I haven't seen anything to convince me otherwise yet.
Yeah, me neither. And the stat sheet kind of told the story in that one, since I didn't watch Steelers Bengals, but on one side of the ball, the vaunted Pittsburgh pressure, and they used to be Blitzburg. They pressured Joe Burrow once. That's all.
Yeah.
One time.
No T.J. Watt. No T.J. Watt, I believe, in that game either.
That's right. He did not play, and as a result, they were not able to generate any pressure at all on Joe
yep.
Burrow. You can't beat any quarterback, I don't think, unless it's, you know, maybe Trevor Lawrence or Zach Wilson. But you're not going to – or Justin Fields, apparently. But you're going to have a hard time beating any quarterback that you pressure one time in the entire game. So that's on that side of the ball. And on the other side, 58 Ben throws to 18 for Burrow. 58 throws? I thought they were fixing the offense. I thought they were
– Oh, wait a minute. I take that back. I was looking at the wrong stat. Najee Harris, 100 yards receiving.
Right. He didn't run very much.
They didn't run them. Yeah. So, no, but this is – hasn't this always sort of been the Steelers' problem? Is they get too throw heavy?
But they sweep out the coaching staff and bring in a new guy and Matt Canada. And,
yeah.
And what's his response this week in the media? We like the direction we're going. We're going to keep things the same.
What?
What? What are you talking about?
We like running for 45 yards every game.
Oh, We like our 39-year-old quarterback throwing 58 times. What the hell are you talking about? I mean,
yeah,
I just don't get it.
Yeah, that's not going to get it done.
And the Chiefs, I had some more thoughts on them. I know we got off of that a little bit, but because it's such an important game in you know, as far as me thinking that they were going to go one way and sweep off the Ravens' loss and rise up and say, okay, we're going to get back on track and do what we got to do. And we know we got a tough opponent in that wants to step up and be in our position, and we got to smack them down. We got to say, son, you're not in our league yet. And they do the exact opposite. They let them stick around, and they wound up giving up the game to the Chargers. So three drives on the verge, of scoring, end up in turnovers, as you referenced before.
Yeah.
But what is that? Is that focus? Is that they have to know, the Chiefs and Andy Reid, that their defense isn't good enough to survive that. You have to know. You have to realize what happened on that Sunday night game that I watched down in Cancun against Baltimore, where you have the Ravens beat and you do the unthinkable. You allow Lamar Jackson to lead a comeback victory, which I don't know if I ever thought that would happen. But you have to know that your defense is fair to poor this year, and you can't give up drives and have drives end in turnovers. Pat Mahomes is clearly not 100 right now. I don't think that's the injuries, because he doesn't seem to be limping around out there, not like Carson Wentz, which was we'll get to that in a second. But he's not there. I don't know if it's his focus or being hurt, but he's not quite there yet, and they just got to do better, especially early in games. I don't know if they're bored already. Sloppy.
Is there a hangover? Lost the Super Bowl. You always have that Super Bowl losers thing that does creep up sometimes. We've talked about how bored they look early, and like they're that team that just thinks that we can turn it on. Like we said, they get down at halftime, boom, touchdown. Wow, hey, look at that, we're back in the lead. We got these guys down. We're the champs. And didn't quite go according to the script. Somebody forgot to tell the Chargers that was the script. Because it was going exactly the way you thought it would. And I was like, oh, man, here we go. Now the Chiefs are one score away from covering this thing, and I'm going to take the L here. And, Justin Herbert, I give him full credit, because he just kept making third down throw after third down throw. And their coach kept going for it, in really tough spots on fourth downs late in the day. Like, they were not playing for ties. They were playing to win that game on the road, and it all came up, it all came up roses for him. So you get all the credit when you kind of moves. Yeah.
You play to win the game.
You get all the credit when those moves work out for you, and you're a genius. But just watch out, because that can go the other way pretty quick if you can't come up and make those plays. And they had some questionable.
Be Riverboat Ron or.
Yeah.
Go the other way.
The Chargers with some real questionable clock management at the end of that game. Looked like a team that was going to beat the AFC champs, but didn't quite know how to do it, right? Like, we're good enough to beat these guys, but we just don't have the experience, because they kind of tried not to win that game late, but it all came out. It all worked out for them.
Yeah, and that was my takeaway. And, not that I watched the game, but just watching the highlights. Like, if you're the Chiefs, you got to tighten things up, because just for one reason only is you got to know that your defense is lagging, at least for now. Maybe they'll turn it around in the second half, but right now, you got to do better. You have
nobody.
To,
yeah, you don't expect the Chiefs to be 1-2.
No.
Right.
First time Mahomes has had a losing record in the NFL.
Wow. Not that I think they're going to finish in last place, but that's where they're sitting right now.
One game I watched over the weekend was the Colts came to Nashville and played the Titans. And, Carson Wentz and Ryan Tannehill were both very shaky, actually, in that game. It wasn't just Wentz, but the Titans win and covered as one of our 11 wins because they got a surprising pass rush that made the difference, which was easier to do because Wentz can't run.
He cannot move. Right. They only get two sacks
before the game, during the game, and after the game. It was terrible.
Right. In this day and age, you can't do that. You can't be Dan Marino back there. And Carson Wentz is no Dan Marino. Dan Marino is back there playing out on blown out Achilles. Remember that?
Right.
It didn't matter because you knew where he was going to be, but before you got to him, the ball was gone.
Yep. That can. Yeah.
Carson Wentz is no Dan Marino. So there's not many quarterbacks in this NFL who can just stand in one spot and produce. like Justin Fields, a good example.
Oh.
Sorry.
But you drafted him because he can move.
He can. He didn't.
Not last week, but
his move was to the turf. That was his move.
His move was three steps to the right and dropped.
Yeah. Like, yeah, that was like some Mortal Kombat. Finish him.
Fatality.
Yeah.
That's pretty much what that was.
The Colts actually hung around in that game. That was a questionable cover for the majority of that game.
Right.
But, Derrick Henry, he did some work. He did his usual. They fed him and he produced.
Right. Henry did what he was supposed to do. And it was not very good early. So that's pretty much why the Colts hung around.
Yeah.
But I could not believe that they had wins. Whatever their backup plan was, they decided that was best. Like Frank Reich looked at Carson Wentz limping around and said, that's our best chance to win. It's like, really?
Tennessee hasn't been overly impressive so far. I mean, that Tennessee could win 9 games, I figure, and win that division. That division is trash.
Oh, those Jags.
What you think of that Sunday night game? That was, I'll tell you what, it was fun.
It was definitely fun, definitely entertaining, and definitely predictable at the end where Garoppolo leads the drive to get the 49ers the lead, leaves 37 seconds on the clock.
37 seconds. And Aaron Rodgers goes full Matt Ryan and gets him down into field goal range.
No timeouts. Keeps finding Davante Adams deep in the middle, deep near the sideline at the 34, and they spike it to give Mason Crosby the 51-yarder for the win. Like, that was so predictable. It didn't matter for our purposes because the Niners took the lead by one and they were 3-point favorites, so they weren't going to cover anyway. But the fact that Rodgers led that drive to get the victory, not surprising. That's about all I can say was, yeah, I just watched it with my head nodding as a Bears fan. But it's like, yeah, this is familiar. I've seen this before. Seen this movie.
What Rodgers would have done to the Bears was find the guy streaking up the seam who was uncovered.
Right.
On fourth down.
He wouldn't have needed 37 seconds either. Pretty much would have been like the first or second play. Would have been like, oh, look, somebody's running 50 yards downfield with nobody around.
Rodgers just takes a snap at the 25, and it's the old Joe Montana slant. It's the Joe Montana football slant pattern. It was unstoppable. It was a touchdown on every play. If you ever had the Sega Genesis, that was literally a touchdown on every single play.
Pretty much.
Just throw a quick slant, and it would always go to the house. I don't know why it was. It was like a bug in the game. That was one of those games, if you were playing against your friends, you're like, you can't run that play. Or you can only run that play like once a game. That's the cheater mode. That was the super secret turbo play. You couldn't do it. But no, I remember sitting on the couch watching it with my wife. And, they're deep, 37 seconds, no timeouts. So I'm like, that's plenty of time for them to work the middle. And the 49ers just kept letting them work the middle.
Yeah, that was stunning. Like, you keep dropping a linebacker, 20 yards deep as if he's going to be able to keep up with Davante Adams. Like, that's not going to work.
Yeah.
That might work with a worse quarterback. With Rodgers and Adams are like a premier combination.
Yes.
They're playing on such a level with, you know, with each other. Like, they are in tune. Adams has elevated himself in the last couple of years, in my eyes, to be one of the top, you know, two or three receivers in football. You know, where Julio Jones stepped back out of that, I think Devontae Adams has now officially stepped in. And yeah, that to leave those two guys that much time, man, I don't know if there's a way for the Niners to have dragged that out and maybe not, you know, left less time, but you know, you take the touchdown when you can, and your defense at some point has to come better than that. That was not a good decision coverage wise by the 49ers.
No, and you know, you'd think that the odds are pretty well in their favor for the majority of that. And to have that turn as quick as that did at the end was pretty shocking. Not shocking from the standpoint of, you know, watching Aaron Rodgers work, but just shocking from the fact that they let it happen.
So the drive for the Niners to take that lead was a very small amount of time as well, because that was Green Bay getting going up 27-21 with a field goal, and that was 2:39 left in the fourth quarter when Garoppolo got that drive to go down the field. Who, you know, George Kittle doing George Kittle things, is refusing to get tackled. Debo Samuel bringing in some tight throws. Kyle Juszczyk got a middle slant at some point to pile drive his way into the end. That was a tremendous effort on that drive by San Francisco. So that showed me, you know, the creativity is still there. Kyle Shanahan and the 49ers offense, that's why they're, you know, just as dangerous as they've always been, because they've got the play caller, they've got the offensive guru, they've got their quarterback for now with Garoppolo. Of course, Trey Lance is still lurking and waiting in the wings. A lot of the criticism you heard during the week was you got to use Trey Lance more. You got to take more advantage of that playmaking ability that he has, instead of always waiting until you're at the 2-yard line and deciding, okay, we got to bring in Trey Lance now because we can't slam it in with our other running backs. So I'm sure you'll see that as the season goes on. I'm sure you'll see more usage of Trey Lance right now. They're trying to stick with Jimmy. Kyle is living up to his word. He said Jimmy's my guy, and that's what he's treating him like. And you still see glimpses.
You don't hang, Jimmy's you can't got, hang you that know, L on Jimmy Garoppolo.
Right.
So,
you still see glimpses that he could be the guy. And you still also see some throws where you got,
I also see a guy who's building trade value.
That very well could be. And should be, really. If you're you can't do that forever. You can't have him and Trey Lance as a tag team.
No.
Eventually, you got to move on to Trey. And when you do, then you should be able to flip Garoppolo for a decent package.
I have a feeling Garoppolo, my prediction, I predict. So here's my prediction, is that Jimmy Garoppolo goes to Atlanta. Who's bad, but I think if this is a rough crop of quarterbacks coming out this year, I could see them trading a two or, you know, putting a package together. Because Matt Ryan, I know they won that game. Hey, good for you. You won that pick. Matt Ryan looks pretty dunzo. I'm eating some crow on that. He's a top 10 fantasy quarterback prediction, because he's not looking good.
Yeah, it's well, the whole offense is not looking good right now. So
no,
it might be.
And that's too much talent for them to be not producing at all.
And there might be Arthur Smith still sort of growing into that and realizing that hey, that's Matt Ryan you got down there, not Ryan Tannehill.
No. I don't think that's what he needs. He needs to realize it's not Derrick Henry.
Oh, God.
Because I tell you what,
I would hope that's
those two. If you flipped those two, if you said Tannehill goes and now he's the Atlanta quarterback and Matt Ryan now goes and he's the Tennessee quarterback, I don't think there's a big drop-off in Tennessee.
I mean, he's got to know that, you know, this whoever is running the ball for Atlanta is going to get, you know, 60, 70 yards a game tops. Like, obviously, you don't have Derrick Henry anymore. But
yeah,
knowing that, you got to use your veteran quarterback now.
Yeah.
It's still early, you know, for all these teams, but definitely some tendencies have come out.
Any other – we already talked about the Thursday night game. Any other games you want to talk about before we get on to the picks?
Let's see. I was laughing at the Jags on the in their loss to the Cardinals in Week 3.
They hung around, they found a way. They found a way not to cover.
Because of the one-foot flea flicker. The flea flicker of Trevor Lawrence, who's off balance and decides
to
throw it
six.
Up.
Oh.
For Byron Murphy.
That was it, too.
That's Pete Jags, man.
That play was so awful.
Yeah, please keep that play in mind for your
worst play of the year. So far.
First of all, the flea flicker idea is terrible to begin with a quarterback that doesn't know what he's doing. And then he makes the decision that much worse by throwing it off balance. Who throws an off balance flea flicker?
Well, and it just wasn't there. It was a bad play.
It was not there at all.
It wasn't there. Throw it away. Run around. Make something happen. But no, they stuck to their guns on that. And then he throws this limp wristed like balloon of a throw. Just that was it. That was my cover.
Yeah. I had to chuckle at that one. Sean Payton and the Saints had to grind one out in New England.
It took care of business, though. That went about as expected, right?
Yeah, that game was in our market down here in Memphis, so I got to watch that whole thing.
Yeah.
So I can report on my opinions of Jameis Winston and Mac Jones as quarterbacks, which is surprisingly kind of even as far as I don't trust either one of them to do very much because Jameis still has those tendencies, man. He still was throwing some balls where you're like, why did you do that? He's still doing that every now and then. You know, it's not, I don't care what kind of eye surgery, Wild Thing is still Wild Thing. And he still has those times where he throws some balls where you go, what made you make that decision? Why did you think that was the right decision to make? And Mac Jones is not all that great. I mean, he's, again, another rookie. So the sample size is very, very small. So I understand. But he's got to get rid of that ball much faster. He's standing back there taking way too much time. He's still processing things. You know, he's really basically on the same level as Lawrence and Zach Wilson. Like, the game is way too fast for them at the moment. That doesn't mean they're always going to be slow, but right now it's definitely a competitive advantage when your quarterback is processing things so much slower than everybody else. The reason Kyler Murray, for example, was so successful as a rookie was because he got over his processing really quick, and he wound up like, okay, I see, you know, the pressure coming at me. I see this whole boom, I'm going to get these fast feet going and take off. And now he's, you know, one of the best playmaking quarterbacks already in the league. And that's the difference, is just processing things, is making the decision to do what you have to do in, you know, snap of a finger. You can't sit back there and just wait. And that's pretty much what doomed Mac Jones in that game against the Saints. So maybe later on, maybe get back in Week 9 and maybe I'll get to see another Patriots game and maybe he'll be doing things faster. But
we get to see one tomorrow.
that's a good point. we all get to see one tomorrow night. And the Legion of Vroom, they make Kirk Cousins
right
look like
on,
a trustworthy
right
quarterback,
schedule.
Didn't they?
Right on schedule.
And they let Dalvin Cook's backup, Alexander Mattison, control them. I mean, that was my big reason for taking the Saints, or not the Saints, but the Seahawks over the Vikings, was because such a dynamic running back in Dalvin Cook was going to be down, not going to play at all. And they just let Alexander Mattison step right in and basically do, you know, close to Dalvin Cook type production. And the Seahawks, they had a chance, but they give up the win to the Vikings, first win of the year for Minnesota.
Yeah.
And you got I really did.
And I really, the only reason I went with the Vikings on that one. Yeah. The Legion of Room, Road Russ. Minnesota didn't feel like an 0-3 team. I thought they were going to, you know, be game. They lost that heartbreaker against Arizona. They lost an overtime game against Cincinnati. I mean, think about how close Minnesota is right now to 3-0. I think if Minnesota had won those two games, I'd have been more apt to take Seattle in that spot. But Minnesota was just like, okay, we're too good to keep losing these kinds of games. And nothing will make you get right at home like having the Seahawks show up. Because,
oh my God,
that defense.
Oh, man. And Justin Jefferson was happy to see him come in. Madison.
Yeah. When Alexander Madison goes for 112.
Yeah.
I mean, and honestly, to take Madison off his jersey and just put guy on the back of his jersey. Because Alexander Madison is just a guy. I mean, he's not terrible, but he's a guy. And Seattle let him show up and control the tempo. And Kirk Cousins looked like really good. Actually, Kirk Cousins is actually having a really good start to the season overall. I'm not going to bag too hard on Kirk Cousins. His numbers to start the year, 73.9 completion percentage, 8 touchdowns, no picks. Very un-Kirk Cousins-like.
You like that? You like that?
Yeah, and a 118.3 quarterback rating. So, you know, that might be the thing that's sort of hidden in the fact, oh, he's a loser because they're 1-2. Maybe they might not be losers because of him this year or so far. But those are good numbers.
Yeah. And, of course,
he's lighting Arizona up in that game. That was a, you know, you call it taffy pull, barn burn, whatever you want to call it. That game they played in week two down in Arizona when they lost on the chip shot field goal that got missed.
Right.
He was firing in that game.
And, of course, got to ask about the lock that wasn't the Raiders and the Dolphins.
That game was some bullshit. I mean, the Raiders had that game won, I don't know, 14, 15, 16 times, and they just kept letting Jack Brisket somehow convert, or, of course, you'd get this, like, oh, they got the win. Oh, no, wait, there was a random defensive this or penalty that. It was just, was the most excruciating end to a game. I mean, they gave Miami 8 shots at first and goal. And it took Miami till the 8th try to tie that game up.
Yeah,
then you're hoping
happens.
For the touchdown in overtime. Vegas gets right there. And then they can't punch it in. It's like, oh.
Yeah, I was scared to death of that. Yeah.
Absolutely excruciating. But, you know, the locks doesn't matter. Like we said last week, it doesn't matter if I win 0 locks the rest of the year. All you get is 1 point.
That's true. However, it still feels good to be out 3-0 in the locks to start.
It'll feel even better when you blow it.
Oh, see, you're trying to whammy me.
Mm-hmm.
All right, the rest
one game, one week at a time. Got it.
Rest of week 4 picks are coming up for you on the other side of this plug for 2 minutes. You are listening live to In Much Less Detail, the podcast, not on the radio, but only here on the website, blogtalkradio.com/InMuchLessDetail. To be notified when we're live, you can follow the show on the Blog Talk Radio website, or you can follow my Twitter feed at IMLDDre when I tweet out when we're live before every show. Jason is on Twitter too. His feed is at IMLDJTG. Our show is available as a podcast where you get the live show and a special VIP after show. To listen to the show as a podcast, about an hour or so after the live show is over, come back to the show page and look through our archives, or subscribe on iTunes or any number of different podcasting apps, including Player.fm, Mixcloud, Blueberry, and the TuneIn Radio app. You'll get the whole show, the live show and the after show, downloaded straight to you. You can always send us a question or comment or shout out via email to the following email address, inmuchlessdetail@gmail.com. You can follow all of our picks on our blog. The website for the blog is inmuchlessdetail.blogspot.com. Our Thursday night picks will be available Thursday afternoon on our Twitter feeds. Again, that's at IMLDDre and at IMLDJTG. This copyrighted broadcast is a production of Jay and Me and is solely performed for our entertainment as well as for any poor soul who happens to be listening. It is intended to be a football pick show for the private, non-commercial use of our audience. Any publication, reproduction, retransmission, or any other use of the descriptions and accounts of this podcast without the express written consent of Jay or me is strictly prohibited. Again, a big game coming up tomorrow night that you may have heard of, and we'll definitely get to that towards the end of the show. We might only have 90 seconds left by the time we get to it. And the biggest spread of the season is on the board this week in week four, and we'll get to that shortly. But we will start off with the Chiefs and the Eagles in Philadelphia. So they're both 1-2. The Chiefs, definitely not expected to be there. The Eagles, yeah, 1-2 sounds about right. Injury news, Frank Clark, Charvarius Ward, the defensive back, trying to work their way back from injury. The Chiefs need defensive help badly as soon as possible. For the Eagles, Sean McCloud should make his season debut as safety. People believing in the Chiefs, they are -6.5 on the road at the Eagles.
I'll take the extra half point here and go with Kansas City, at least as a touchdown favorite. I think that this has got to be, right, you had the rough loss against Baltimore. You had the rough loss against the Chargers. You can't take anybody lightly. So I don't think that the Chiefs are the type of team that are going to just show up expecting to win this game. Andy Reid is to get these guys coached up. Philadelphia is a team that's sort of ripe for the picking. Yeah, it feels like a whole lot of weird stuff could happen in this game. This isn't a spot that we're used to seeing. It's a very odd matchup, KC at Philly. Not something that we see, but once every, maybe 8 years. So with the rotations, or every 4 years with the way they rotate through the league. So it's an odd game for me. So it feels a little scary on that side. But if you're Kansas City and you need to get right, you need to get right like hard. Maybe they come out and look a little flat in the first quarter, but I think their offense is going to be too much for the Eagles to overcome. So I'm going to go ahead and take KC and a touchdown.
Well, coming back hard, logically, in my mind, made more sense last week with a division rival coming in that you would think that the Chiefs were spending all week licking their wounds off the Baltimore loss, thinking, okay, now we got the Chargers, you know, what they're capable of, you know, Justin Herbert wants to come in and take us down. We have to be at our A game. We have to be at our best. And they were definitely not at their best. This seems like more of a letdown spot to me at Philly, like you were talking about.
Uh-oh.
the matchup is unusual.
It's a trap.
It's, you know, Jalen Hurts, and you don't quite know what to make of it. And, you know, the Chiefs aren't sucking offensively. They just have to stop turning the ball over. The old Philly defense, I would be on upset alert. Like, I'm not talking about old, like Hugh Douglas and those guys. I'm talking about the team that just won a title, the team that, you know, busted Tom Brady in the fucking mouth. Those guys, I'd be worried seriously about a victory, because those guys could really handle themselves defensively. And this isn't those Eagles. But I like the number. That's a big number. So I'll take Jalen Hurts to hang around. I'll take Philadelphia in the 6.5 points and take my chances. The Chiefs don't give me – they don't engender too much confidence right now. We know there's a point where they'll flip the switch and figure things out and play it up to their abilities and their potential, but hasn't happened quite yet. So until that does,
right,
we'll have to take our chances.
All I can say is thank you.
On to the Giants and the Saints. The New York Giants at 0-3. What's New York team is going to find a victory this season first?
I had the Giants in the playoffs, man. Oh.
It's still early. Only week four.
Only 14 games left to go. They got plenty of time to go on a run.
That's right. The Superdome is apparently operating. They're going to really be turning out for the Superdome in New Orleans. They're going to set that place on fire.
Fans
are going to be hot as well. Sorry, I just had to. Giants
hashtag storms coming.
Giants at 0-3 are plus a touchdown, +7 at Jameis and the 2-1 Saints.
I'd love to take the Giants in this. I can't do it. I mean, it's good Jameis, bad Jameis, good Jameis. This would be bad Jameis week, but they're playing the Giants. The Giants at home against the trash Atlanta defense could only put up 14. The Saints, you know what? We could talk about Jameis, and we talk about Alvin Kamara. We talk about the offense, but you pointed out a couple of weeks ago, or last week even, about we don't talk much about their defense. And they have a top 10, at least maybe top five defense in the whole league. Yeah, they're going to, you know, put the screws to Danny Dimes and then that pretty sad Giants offense. And I think they get away with a double-digit win here.
Yeah, Dennis Allen put it on Mac Jones. He dialed up some pressures. He dialed up some exotics and made the rookie look like a rookie. And, yeah, that's definitely an undersung part of the Saints dynasty is their defense has definitely been a very key part of that. And definitely helped out by the Giants will be missing two different wide receivers. They already have trouble keeping guys on the field. Sterling Shepard and Darius Slayton already ruled out for this game. Hard to imagine the Giants hanging in there and competing, especially in that environment. Wild Thing comes home, Superdome rocking, first actual real home for the Saints. I concur with you. I will take New Orleans and give the 7. The Tennessee Titans and the New York Jets. I repeat the musical question. Which New York team gets a win first? Will it be the Giants? We both say no. Will it be the Jets at 0-3 hosting the Titans, the 2-1 Tennessee Titans, as you already actually mentioned earlier in the show, the fact that they are going to have to go in here and win with no receiving, basically, because both those big studs, A.J. Brown and Julio Jones, have bad hamstrings. Both have already been ruled out for this game, and the betting public does not give a fuck because it's the Jets. So the Titans are still 6-point favorites on the road at New York.
You remember when we talked about, like, with those games where, like, the bad wind games with the Vikings or with the Browns, and it was like you were forced to run the football, and it's like the worst thing Tennessee or the worst thing for the Jets that Tennessee could be forced to have to do is just feed Derrick Henry. Derrick Henry might go for 250 in this game. It's going to – I'll take Tennessee just on the back of Derrick Henry in this game. I think he's up for the challenge. He's going to have to run, and he's going to have to run a lot, and I think that's just going to open up play action. Again, it's Tannehill. If you have Derrick Henry, the threat of Derrick Henry, guys will be open. They don't have to be A.J. Brown and Julio Jones. They just have to be guys that are open. So I'll take Tennessee and give the points.
Jamison Crowder is expected to make his debut for the Jets at wide receiver, and as soon as he steps on the field, he's going to be the best receiver on the field. On either side. So it's interesting. It could be even more interesting if the Jets load up against King Henry defensively and sort of make Tannehill go over the top and beat him with – you talk about receivers who are just guys, Westbrook, Kine, and I never heard of half of these guys. The Jets are that bad, and I'm going to go and take Tennessee and concur with you and give the 6 points. The Jets are just terrible. They're just terrible. I'm sorry, Lou.
And Zach Wilson's going to throw two to the Titans. So, at least.
Yeah. The Titans.
Kevin Byard will have a pick six. You know, something weird's going to – yeah. It's going to happen.
The Titans who don't usually pressure anybody in any
mistake. If Kevin Byard gets a pick six, you're going to just totally give nothing but crap for not having a prop bet or something on that.
The Titans don't usually force any of that, but it's Zach Wilson. So, the Titans will probably force something like that. You're probably right. Carolina and Dallas.
They should start calling him Flip Wilson because he flips the field all the time for the other team.
To the other team? Oh, boy.
That's what I'm going to start calling him.
You're on a roll.
Hey!
Panthers and Cowboys, we talked about the teams, the undefeated teams that are kind of, you know, we're talking a little real or fake early on. The Panthers and the Broncos, we were a little suspect. Our eyes are on you. So Carolina 3-0. That was the last game they played was the Thursday nighter, right, in week 3? So,
yeah.
So they get to get the extra rest before they go down to Jerry World. Dallas, 2-1. They, you know, had the opening loss on opening night, and they've come back, got 2 in a row, looked pretty good in their victory. Panthers are underdogs. They are undefeated, but they are +4 at the 2-1 Cowboys.
Obviously, the matchups here to watch are going to be what both defenses can do against those two offenses, because you've got Carolina, the number one defense so far statistically in football. And, yeah, they've beaten some bad teams. They also beat the Saints. They turned over the Saints and Jameis Winston a whole bunch of times and made them look bad. But maybe they're unsung or maybe they're overrated. We're going to find out, because that Dallas offense, they can move the football. I mean, they're putting up some – they're putting up some numbers. On the other side, that Dallas defense, woo. If Sam Darnold is really the answer, that's the 31st ranked passing defense right now in football. That is not good. That means there's only one worse than you. So they can definitely give it up. I could see this game being kind of high scoring. I could see this being a lot of back and forth. I'm taking Carolina strictly as a points play here. I like the 4, so I actually think that the Cowboys sneak out a field goal victory here. So I'm going to get a little cute, take the Panthers and the points.
Shockingly, that number 32 dead last pass defense in football right now is world champion Buccaneers. Are just getting lit up through the air because nobody wants to run on them. So you just go in and just throw. And right now they're not defending it well, and the injuries are playing a big part of that as well, of course. As far as this game, your guy, more Hubba Bubba in the backfield for Carolina. And be so much better of a game or more interesting of a contest if you had Christian McCaffrey back there for the Panthers. But nope, Hubba Bubba, the starting running back for Carolina. Watching the Cowboys game, Micah Parsons, even though the defense is trash, Micah Parsons does indeed jump off the screen he's different. He's a different cat. He's an athlete. He's flying around and pretty much filling the gaps and filling up the holes wherever the football is. You look up and there's Micah Parsons. So he does indeed look that special. I was hearing the hype about him in the preseason and seeing him in action. I'm a fan. I'm definitely going to keep my eye on him. And I said Zeke probably would wake up because of all the talk about Tony Pollard gives us a better chance to win, and he's got a higher yards per average, whatnot. And what happens on that standard, Zeke wakes up and takes over and says, hey, wait a minute, I'm still the man around here. So impressive performance by him. He looks like he's got his spark back. So I'm going to take Dak and the Cowboys and give the 4. Definitely don't believe in Carolina overall. You know, congratulations on your good start, but that was definitely a function of the schedule, at least partially. So we'll see if they make me eat my words and show up. And you got the Panthers to do just that. So we'll see on that one. Here's an interesting game, Cleveland and Minnesota, because these two teams, these are the two offenses that I've been railing on for the last couple of years that clearly do not want to have to win games with their franchise quarterback. They clearly want to do as little as they can to actually use their quarterback that they're paying all the money to and making their franchise up. Which team manages to make the other quarterback fuck up first is basically going to be this comes down to. The 2-1 Browns are the very slight road favorite, -1 at the 1-2 Vikings.
If this game was a meme, it would be the Spider-Man pointing at himself meme.
You suck. No, you suck.
Yeah, because these two teams are the mirror image, right? I mean, I remember even back, it must have been AFC, NFC preview, one of those shows where I was talking about how these two teams are their conference's version of themselves, right? But I talked about it a little bit when we were talking about the Vikings. I've actually been somewhat impressed so far by Kirk Cousins, and I'm going to actually take the Vikings here at home. It hurts me to say it. I'm choking on my words. the Brown fever didn't even have to really show up last week to win that game against that no-account Bears team. And I think that this is a little tougher test for them going up to Minnesota, going up to the Dome, playing on the fast track. We'll see if they're, the running games, I think, end up maybe canceling each other out. But I've been impressed with Cousins so far. I think he has a good game. And I think Minnesota here wins as a home dog. Go figure.
Very good job, very impressive job by Alexander Mattison filling in last week for Dalvin Cook. Dalvin is expected to return this week from his ankle injury, so could be a two-headed monster in the backfield for Minnesota, setting up Cousins to Thielen and Cousins to Jefferson and all the other big plays that they've been making this year. I'm going to concur. I think the Vikings will make Baker Mayfield spit it up and choke it up before the Browns make Kirk Cousins spit it up. And that sounds counterintuitive considering what the Browns just did to Justin Fields last week. But as much as I criticize Mike Zimmer and the Vikings, they're not as dumb as the Bears. They're not going to let Cleveland Browns do that to them like the Bears just let them due to them. So I concur, and I'll take the Vikings.
Yeah, I don't see that Kirk Cousins just standing there waiting to get sacked for the whole game.
They know better. You've got to know better. Everyone should know better. Why? I don't have the opposite of celebration on my board, on my soundboard. Whatever the opposite is, that's he's not dead yet. I'm not going to do that. On to the Washington.
Well, he gets sacked 9 times every game. You're going to be playing the MASH music.
Well, yeah, he'll be dead if he keeps playing against the Browns and Myles Garrett, that's for sure. The Washington football squad team, Yay Sports, at the Atlanta Falcons. They're both 1-2, but the public believes in Washington a lot more because they're, despite having the same record, they're the road favorite. Washington is 1.5 at Atlanta.
I have no clue what the hell really to make of either one of these teams. You think you could bank on Washington, like that old defense, right? Ron Rivera, their defense has been abysmal so far.
Yeah.
I mean, we're 3 games in now, so you can't just say, oh, okay, it's an aberration. You start looking at these rankings for their offense, I mean, their defense, 31st in yards, 28th against the pass, 25th against the run, 29th in points scored, dead last in turnovers. I mean, that is as bad as it gets defensively against an Atlanta offense that's almost as bad.
I'm about to say, now do Atlanta.
So any side of the football here, who has the edge when you're looking at it through 3 games, this is going to really hurt. This is almost like counterintuitive for me to say, I'm going with Atlanta's defense in this game. They've actually...
That sounded painful.
It did, because they're not good, but they're holding it together. Whatever they're doing, this bend don't break, holding teams to field goals, making teams work for everything, go on these long drives. I don't know if Tyler Heineke's whatever the hell his name is. I don't know if he's the guy for that. So I'm going to go ahead, I'm going to take Atlanta here as the home, again, another home dog. The week of the home dog.
Well, speaking of counterintuitive, and I don't feel, very confident about it, but as huge of a Matty Ice fan as I am, and I feel like I've defended him pretty much since he came in the league. I had a lot of criticism early on, but I've always been a huge fan of his. Any matchup of two close teams and the quarterbacks are Taylor Heineke versus Matty Ice, I would jump on Matty Ice all the time, except Matty Ice under Arthur Smith right now is 5.9 yards per throw. I would have never imagined that Matty Ice would be doing something that terrible right now. They've drafted that rookie tight end, Kyle Pitts. He's been a non-factor. Yeah. They have not got on the same page yet.
More like Kyle Piss. Piss poor.
Kyle is the Pitts right now. I'm going with the football team.
Man, I just hope they win by one. Hope Washington wins this one like 7-6 because it feels bad. Like it just feels like it's going to be ugly.
Yeah, that was painful for me to squeeze out there, but that feels like a great offense for the Potato Skins to get right against, which is just foul, man. It's just wrong.
No, I don't know how Atlanta's offense is doing that. They're setting football back. Well, we'll talk about another team that's football back. But.
That's coming up in a couple of picks. First, we'll talk about maybe this team is setting football back, too. Carson Wentz and his ankles are 3, and they get to go to down on South Beach to take on Jack Brisket and the 1-2 Dolphins. So which side of this one do you possibly like? Indianapolis plus 2.5 at Miami.
I have absolutely – again, this is probably the hardest week. Usually it's like week 2 is the week. This is the week I sat there and I looked at these games and I was like, I don't know what to do. Miami's offense is terrible, but they looked okay, but they had to fight for everything against the Raiders, who just kept giving them chance after chance after chance after chance. It was rough, but Indy still brings the defense. You can take defense on the road, and they can run the ball, and you can take that on the road. So if they just – here's what you do. A lot of Jonathan Taylor – don't put Carson Wentz in obvious stand there and get his brains beat in type of situations. Miami hasn't really defensively been the team that's been bringing anything so far. I think the easiest thing they do here is simplify it, ugly the hell out of this game, you know, just and Indy sneaks off with their first win. I think they just escape here with a win. So I'm going to take Indy to get the straight up win. I think it's going to be ugly as hell too.
Big injury issues for the Colts besides the quarterback who is immobile. Two defensive backs are not going to play tomorrow. Two offensive linemen are not going to play tomorrow. We talked about how impressive their O-line has been over the last couple of years, pretty much the secret weapon pushing that team to playoff contention, and it has not been there for them so far this year, partly due to injury. And the rookie defender, Quiddy Pay, that I liked so much in the draft, he's not going to play tomorrow. So there's a lot of people already hurt for the Indianapolis Colts. That O-line was a strength, but they were really beat up. Did I mention a quarterback can't move? I think I may have mentioned that once or twice or three times. So, like I said, I watched the game down here, Colts and Titans. The broadcast crew mentioned that one of their little anecdotes was talking to Carson Wentz, and he relayed to them that his ankles were so bad last week, not this past week leading up to this game, but last week leading up to that Titans game, his ankles were so bad that there was some point every single night that week that he woke up with his ankles throbbing in pain.
Man.
And that's the best effort? That's the guy that you think gives you the best chance to win? I still don't understand what's going on. Maybe the other guys are that terrible. Maybe Frank Reich knows his other backup quarterbacks are just complete shit, and that's why he's doing this. I don't know. But the point is the Colts are beat up offensively and now on defense as well. Something else that, you know, I don't have a PFF stats, but I do have one, and it's not even really a PFF stat. It's just a metric. It's just a stat. Blitz rate. We always talk about the Steelers and the Ravens, and they always switch off. Feels like every year they switch off back and forth to who leads the league in blitz rate. Through 3 weeks, it's still early, but right now the team that leads the league in blitz rate, the Miami Dolphins, are blitzing 44% of the time.
They're just
Here comes Carson Wentz and his bad ankles limping into town. So that seems like a recipe for disaster. So I'm going to take the Miami Dolphins and give the 2.5. Go Jack Brisket. Give me another win.
You didn't lock that up.
No, I didn't feel quite that
confident.
Oh,
okay. All right. The way you were talking it up, I was waiting for the
yeah.
But no, not to be.
No, not. Couldn't pull that trigger. Detroit. Speaking of the games that I was looking at, I had no idea which way I'm going to go. Detroit, Chicago. Yeah. So the Lions are 0-3. They're biting ankles. They've covered a couple of numbers, but they're still winless at this moment. And then there's Chicago at 1-2, and of course Matt Nagy playing games all week in the media talking about that any one of the three quarterbacks could possibly be a candidate to start this game on Sunday before he finally gave it up today and said that Dalton's not going to be the man, and it's going to be Justin Fields once again to get the start for Chicago in Soldier Field after that game last week. Kid, good luck. The Lions are still underdogs despite that Justin Fields effort. Detroit is plus 2.5 at Chicago.
I'm not a stat guy, right? I'm going to throw a stat at you right here. I hope you haven't eaten anything in the last few hours being a Bears fan. Because I saw this, and I don't know if I've ever seen this far three games into a season before. The Bears are literally underwater. They're so bad offensively. They're averaging 101 yards on the ground a game. They're averaging 91 yards through the air per game.
This is 1925?
That's exactly what they're talking about, setting football back. They are rushing for more than their passing in 2021, I'm taking the Lions. I said they're the try-hard team. I'll take Jared Goff over that all day long because I don't know what that is. 97 pass yards per game. There are teams that do that per quarter. Contrast that with the Raiders, who are throwing for like 380 a game. The Bears haven't done that all season.
And in the game last week against the Browns, how do you average under 1 yard per throw, per pass play? How do you do that? Like I said, I got no on this one. They're going to throw Fields out there again. You know what? I'm going to take Chicago and give it a 2.5 on the thought that Justin Fields can't be worse.
It can't be that bad, right?
Can't be. Can't play worse than that. And plus, Detroit hasn't traded for Myles Garrett, not yet. I'm going to check one more time before we go off the air to make sure. But I don't think they traded for Garrett, so I think I'm good there. All right, biggest spread of the season so far, the Houston Texans, and they're you got all these winless teams. Houston's actually won a game, we keep forgetting.
They did. They won the first one. They had that.
Yeah. So the one and two Texans, that was it. That was the one. 1-16 they're on the road for. And the Buffalo Bills have lost the game. They're 2-1, but since that loss, they've sort of turned it around and been kicking some serious ass. So as a result, the Texans and what was his name? Davis Mills are plus 17.
General Mills?
Josh Allen and plus 17 at Josh Allen and the Buffalo Bills.
Yeah, for the sake of time, I'm not going to talk too long about this game. You said it. The Bills lost that first game against Pittsburgh. It had that air of preseason week four to it, and since then they have been all cylinders. This is Buffalo squash, big time squash. I'll take the Bills, give them all. Not enough.
Yeah, Houston, Warren Moon isn't walking through that door for you. You know what? I just don't
well,
think
if he Buffalo was is... if he was, the Bills would still win, even though Houston would be up by 32 points.
Well, this is true. And if he was, the Houston would start him over Davis Mills right now.
And then Frank Reich would have to come back out of retirement.
Whatever age Moon is, they'd take him right now as their starting quarterback. I don't think the
I would.
I guess I don't think Buffalo is nearly as dominant as these last couple of weeks. I know the scoreboard. You're just looking at the scoreboard like, oh my God, they destroy people. There's some garbage time issue that it's just. I guess I'm getting this little bit of a feeling of a little fluky, like, they're kicking ass, but really 17, but they might make me eat my words. I'm going to take the Texans. That's a lot of fucking points.
I think the Bills have this covered at halftime.
It's not like the Jets or, a team that's, complete ass. Like, Houston won a game.
They won a game with Tyrod Taylor.
Yeah.
And actually, in that second game, we're looking really good with Tyrod.
Until.
That's why they put the big points on the game, right? They're enticing you.
They're making you have to consider it. I mean, that's a lot of freaking points, man.
And when Buffalo wins 41-10, you'll be, okay.
Well, I guess they were.
Davis Mills, I know one thing about Davis Mills. He's good for one drive. You're going to get one good drive out of him every game, and that's it.
Maybe, hopefully that'll be enough for me. On to late afternoon action. We got two barn burners in that great NFC West, two games where they're playing each other. The only unfortunate thing is they're taking place at the same time, so you can't watch them both. But they both will probably be really good. So we'll start with Arizona and the L.A. Rams, the battle of the undefeateds. They're both 3-0. The world's in love with L.A. right now and Matt Stafford and Sean McVay after what they did to Tampa Bay, forgetting a little bit about the Arizona Cardinals, who are also undefeated, and Kyler Murray looking like an MVP candidate. And they're still a big underdog, no surprise. Relatively big. They're plus 4.5, Arizona is, at the L.A. Rams.
Yeah, and I think we're forgetting, you don't really have to try to run the ball on the Rams. Just throw. That's what it did for Tom Brady. He threw for like 8,000 yards in that game. What really speaks to me on this game is the fact that Arizona, even after getting just completely torched by Kirk Cousins, still has really good defensive rankings. You can run on them, but nobody on the Rams can really rush the football. So it plays against the strength of where you'd want to go against that Cardinals defense. You want to be able to run the ball on them, but the Rams can't run the ball. So I think this is going to be a whole lot of Matthew Stafford and Kyler Murray and back and forth, and this is going to be a really fun game. Yeah, it's too bad that this is locked into that afternoon slot against some other really good games that are probably going to get more national publicity because it's being played on the West Coast. This doesn't feel like a sunning type situation for me either, because I don't think that the Rams 3-4 years ago, this would have been a sunning type game, but the Rams are starting, they're coming back, right? The Rams aren't that dominant they once were, where I think they're just going to put the Cardinals down and just like, you know what, go back to your rooms. So I'm going to take the Cardinals and the points here. I think they keep this close.
Yeah, the Rams, if they want to justify all that love, they can't have a letdown here off the big Tampa Bay win, because if they do, Kyler Murray will absolutely run them ragged, inside, outside, up the middle, around the edges. Kyler Murray will just run all around them if they take it easy and don't play up to their potential. I don't think they're going to take the Cardinals lightly, but I don't know if they might know what they're in for. You come off that Tampa win and you think you got the world, at your feet and you can do anything, and, maybe a little bit of a letdown, maybe a chance for LA to get a little bit of humbling and comeuppance. They will have Darrell Henderson return from his rib injury at running back. Not saying that he's a world beater, but he's better than what they got. He'll definitely help them there. But they would really love to have a someone to blast away at Arizona so they can set up the big pass plays. They do not have that right now. I think the Arizona Cardinals actually might have more weapons on the field than the Los Angeles Rams right now. And I'm not trying to short Cooper Kupp and say that he's a fluke or anything. I think he's a hell of a football player. I've loved Robert Woods forever as well. But when you look at all the guys right now that Kyler Murray is having huge, huge success with, big plays. Old-ass A.J. Green makes big plays. Of course, Nuke Hopkins. Christian Kirk makes big plays. His rookie Rondale Moore, he can throw it up, and that guy will apparently go get it. The Cards actually might be more chalked right now offensively. Arizona has played well, like you said, in pass coverage. It's a big test here, obviously, against the Rams. It's a different breed. The big brain battle of Cliff Kingsbury and Sean McVay, they're always going to have, innovative plays. Are going to come out with new stuff. It's probably going to be a battle of, plays that you've never seen before and formations you've never seen and whatnot. They're always going to get it on. I'm actually going to take Arizona to spring the upset. Like I said, I think the Rams are getting a little bit of a big head and getting so much love around the country. And again, I'm the one that picked them to win the NFC. So it's not like I think they're a fluke, but I just think they're getting so much media hype around the world, around the country. The Cardinals are for real. They are, they were fun bad last year. Right now they're just fun. They're not bad really at all. They're just, there's some ass kickers on that offense, pretty much, every slot in the formation, they go four wide and all four of them can go long and beat you. And even if you cover all of them up, that leaves Kyler Murray back there to run around, and he can definitely beat you with his feet. So I think this is actually a statement game and a bit of a coming out game for the Arizona Cardinals. I think they both get up in the 30s. I think it's a shootout, and I think the Cardinals come out on top in the end.
All right, so we're kumbaya there.
And then the Seahawks and the 49ers in the other half of that division. The records, of course, are not nearly as shiny. Seattle 1-2, San Francisco 2-1, but they always have great games between these two teams. And the Seahawks are the underdog, plus 2.5 out there at San Fran.
Is week 4 still too late in the season to go to your preseason picks as some justification for your pick? But I'm going to do it.
Oh, no, not at all.
I had the Niners to win this division, and I had the Seahawks finishing dead last in the division. And I'm going to go ahead. I'm going to ride that. Tough loss for them on that Sunday night game against Aaron Rodgers. But you know what makes you feel good? When the DFL defense comes to town, baby. That Seattle defense. Oh, my God. Jimmy G and Trey, they could draw up all kinds of plays. This is Kyle Shanahan's, wet dream scenario, this team's defense coming to town. You get a little road rust in the action, too? Yeah, I'll go ahead. I'll take San Fran to cover.
Well, George Kittle has a calf injury. They don't know if he's going to be out there. If he is, he won't anywhere near 100%. And a couple of big injuries in the San Francisco defensive backfield. Kaywan Williams and Josh Norman will be out. They had signed Josh Norman almost out of desperation. He came up coughing up blood after the game last week. So he's not going to play. So they're running a little thin back there in the Niners secondary. They might get down to as bad as the Legion of Room. They've got a ways to go, but they're working on it. The Legion of Room needs to be stronger versus Jimmy G, and San Fran needs to not let Tyler Lockett pull a Davante Adams and just get free all over the place no matter where you go. You look up and he's wide open. I'm actually going to take the Seahawks to knock off the 49ers. I think they can right now run the ball a lot better, a lot more consistently than the 49ers and set up their play action and set up Tyler Lockett has just been a beast. To start this season, and DK Metcalf hasn't even got to really get off yet because Tyler Lockett's been open so much. So, you know, combining San Fran having injuries on their defense with the combinations that Seattle can put together in the air, got a feeling about Road Russ coming through in this spot. So I'm going to go ahead and take Seattle and go against you on that one. Here's an interesting one. The Ravens and the Broncos definitely – got to look at the under when you talk about these two teams, the way they play. Ravens are 2-1. Broncos are 3-0. Another one of those teams. A little bit of real or fake. We'll find out early in the season. Ravens are very slim favorites, -1 at the Broncos.
Man, weird things happen when you have Baltimore go up to Denver. We know that, right? man, do you remember that playoff
game? They can't go
game?
To double overtime. We know that.
Man, but yeah, that was it's an odd matchup, Baltimore going up there to Denver. But man, we've had some fun games with these two before. But I'm going to take Denver here. At Baltimore, you keep playing with fire, eventually you're going to get burnt. And that's all they've been doing these last couple of games. Big comeback against the Chiefs. I mean, a win that they shouldn't have even gotten on the road against the Lions. You can't play like that on the road here against Denver in that defense. And the semi-competent offense of the Denver Broncos, I think that's good enough for them to get a home win here. And again, another home dog.
By a point. Basically,
it's a home dog.
It is. I'm playing the stepping up in class game that you just played on the other side because the Broncos are going from the Jets to the Ravens, which is like going from
yeah.
Roseanne to Megan the Stallion. There's just no comparison. Denver will not be ready to handle Lamar Jackson running around and doing his thing. So I'm going to take the Ravens in that situation, give the 1 point for the road favorite there. All right. One more game before the big main event. Pittsburgh up there at Lambeau in your neck of the woods. The poor Steelers at 1-2. What the hell are they doing? And the Packers look to have righted the ship at 2-1. Big Ben and the Steelers are 6-point underdogs at Aaron Rodgers and the Packers.
I call this one a really weird feeling, but I'm actually, even though they look like total trash so far, I'm going to take the Steelers here. I'm not going to go so far as to say that they spring the upset. But I think if there's anything left in the tank for them, they're going to pull it all out here against Green Bay. Again, coming off the big win in prime time, they're coming back home. Pittsburgh looks like, you know, they're like that wounded animal team. I don't know if Green Bay is good enough to just put them out. Roethlisberger is going to throw, and Green Bay eventually will give it up in the secondary. So I think that, you know, Najee Harris will probably have a nice game. Green Bay special teams, watch out. They have moments where they come up really small. And I could see this being that kind of a game where it's a kickoff return touchdown or a punt return or a block. But I think Mike Tomlin, I think it's desperation time for the Steelers. If they go and they lose this one, it's starting to look really bad for them. So I think they give it all they got and they keep this under the six.
They do get Deontay back in from a knee injury, Deontay Johnson, the receiver, and T.J. Watt from his groin injury should return as well, but Chase Claypool will be out with a hamstring injury. On the Packers side, no MVS. Marquez Valdes-Scantling has a hammy, so he's down, and Kevin King is down with a concussion, which is
that's
a good
an upgrade.
Thing because, again, when I was watching him play in that Monday night game, I was like, what are you doing? Where are you going? So that may be an upgrade for them. I'm sorry, the Steelers, 32 in running and they're 13th in passing, but they're not certainly with big plays because they're only averaging 6.2 yards per throw. I don't know what's going on with that offense, but until they fix that, I can't take them. So I'm going to take Green Bay and give the six. Packers look like they're starting to get on the roll. On to the, we haven't played the lock for either one of us yet. So
I have a feeling
going
that
into
we're about to.
Tampa Bay and the New England Patriots, the Foxborough family reunion, Tampa and New England, Tom Brady coming back to New England. Bucks are 2-1, Patriots are 1-2, and Tampa and the Bucks are -6.5 at the Patriots.
Yeah. You know, you just wonder, you know, Tampa Bay's never had to face Bill Belichick in that defense. What is Bill Belichick coming up with to throw at Tom Brady, right? He watched him play quarterback for about 20 years. So if anybody knows how to defend this guy, you'd figure it's going to be Bill Belichick. Yeah, it's not enough. Tampa Bay, lock it up. Squish.
Well, Tampa's desperate for DB help. They signed Richard Sherman. That's how many injuries they have. They had to go off the street. Desperate. Gronk is not going to be part of the reunion festivities. He's got bad ribs. We actually saw that happen during that game, saw the hit that he took. So no surprise that he's going to be out and probably going to be out a couple more weeks. And running back Giovanni Bernard is also out as well for Tampa. For New England, James White had a nasty hip injury,
yep.
And his season looks like it's over. So big weapon out of the backfield for the Patriots is no longer going to be there. But yeah, L.A., once again, speaking to what you were talking about, showed the world how to beat Tom Brady. Bust him in the fucking mouth. And you know Bill Belichick knows how to beat Tom Brady. The question, does Bill Belichick have the horses to beat Tom Brady, to bust him in the fucking mouth?
No!
And early on, the statistics say 26.3% pressure rate for the Patriots early on. That's okay, but only six quarterback knockdowns through three games. That sucks. That is awful. And, of course, Brady only needs 67 yards to break Drew Brees' yardage record and complete with the Kinkos. Are they going to get the FedEx Kinkos certificate out for Tom Brady? That's the big question
Winnie. That piece of paper will someday be in the Hall of Infamy, the Drew Brees. We can't put Drew Brees in the Hall of Infamy, but we could put his Kinkos photocopied green bar printer sheet or whatever the hell that was that they gave him in the middle of the game.
Participation certificate.
Man.
Congratulations. This is the GOAT. I'm probably going to have a trophy presentation. They're probably going to stop the game and wheel out, you know, a LED board and have, you know, the president say congratulations and everything. They're, you know, that's Tommy. They can't just, you know, they're going to treat Brady, Brees like that because that's Drew Brees, but this is Tommy. So I don't know what they're going to do for that, but it won't be a Kinko certificate, I promise you. Brady is not letting Brady Jr. beat him in Foxborough. So, yeah. And that's one of the rare times where we get the double lock on the same side. Maybe once a year, or once every other year.
Often. It's about as often as the dual lock, the opposite lock.
Right. Yeah, the lock off.
That only happens about once a year, too, where we're so sure against each other that we have it as our lock of the week. That might not even be once a year.
Right, that does probably happen maybe once in the whole time that we've been doing the locks. Got only a minute to talk about what should be a pretty good game on Monday night. Vegas Clippers, the 3-0 Las Vegas Raiders, again, real or fake. 3-point underdogs at Justin Herbert and the 2-1 Chargers.
There's going to be a little offense, I think, in this game overall. But if there's a weak side of the football for either one of these teams, I think it's definitely going to be the Raiders' defense. Again, the Chargers, you can run on the Chargers, but I think that plays into the overall game plan. I don't think the Chargers and the Raiders want to play this game as a slow-paced, methodical game, and I don't think that the Raiders are smart enough to exploit that. So I'm going to go ahead. I'm going to take the Chargers here in prime time. Sort of that Justin Herbert showing up on the primetime stage. It'll be a fun game, though.
Yeah, I think it will too. Josh Jacobs, game time decision for Las Vegas with an ankle injury. Both defenses have been kind of impressive, kind of an early real or fake for both of them. Vegas pressure versus Clippers turnovers, which one is going to hold up? I'm gonna straddle it. I'm gonna take the points. I think LA will win, but I'm gonna take Vegas in the 3 points just in case.
Wow,
they find a way to pull
cute.
It out. Yeah.
Okay.
More on our after show when we come back. VIP after show program. Yeah, the hot football party, 2 full hours. It's been a while since we did the full boat there.
Yeah, well, it's been a weird schedule. You know, mm-hmm. you had your trip, and then we did the midweek show. We went a little old school. We actually did a recap show and then a pick show. So, yeah, we haven't really had a full football party in, you know, several weeks here. It was back to, what, week one? But we got them all in. We disagree a lot this week.
We do. Was it eight last week? Half the slate?
Yeah, it was eight last week, and it's it just goes to tell you how weird I feel. This is, I think, by far the hardest week. So that might give you the advantage, because I don't see much of this clearly at all. I'm a coin flip on a whole bunch of these games.
I'm not all that confident either. I feel pretty much the same as you. So geniusness up in the air for both of us, but we're already on record. We don't feel very confident in our picks. We'll have to wait and see how they play out.
I know we both went 11-5 last week, so it's easy to say, yeah, I felt great. Uh-huh. I felt much better about my picks last week going into week three than
right.
I feel about these picks going into week four. Last week I made the picks. I made them quick. This week I had to look at a lot of things. I'm like, oh, God. If I'm starting to look at stuff and not just get the feel, like, I didn't really have many games where I just got the feeling, you know, and that's what I'm usually going for. Like, how does this feel? Like, what am I looking at? Oh, I start looking at numbers, and I'm starting to see matchups, and I'm like, oh, this isn't my thing. You know, I'm more of that, you know, go with the gut, storylines, feeling, momentum. There's not a lot of that for this week. You got a lot of teams coming off of big wins, but then they're going into tough games. It's a really weird week.
No, I'm with you. I usually start off by going down the list of the games and just circling straight up and then working out from there how I
right.
think the score is going to play out.
You said you predict the score.
Yeah.
And then before you even so much look at the spreads.
Right. I try not to look at the spreads at all until I pick my score.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I did not have a whole lot of games where I just already, you know, ticked off, oh, yeah, definitely, you know, this team straight up, that team straight up.
Oh,
but
I did
Tennessee
Tampa.
Over the Jets, of
course, Tampa,
so,
I
know,
had no problem.
And Tampa over New England. And Green Bay over Pittsburgh was the easy ones for me. But, like, the two NFC West games, I was like, I don't know.
Well, we agree on one of them. We both got
right.
Arizona. And then you have Seattle. Again, you're just riding those Seahawks.
Just keep riding the Seahawks, yeah. Hopefully it'll come through this time. So, not counting the Thursday night game, 15 games tomorrow and Monday, and we are different. On 10 of them.
Oh, my God.
Only
wow.
5 games we agree on, and the other 10 we're fighting. So this is going to be a brawl this weekend.
Yeah, this is a wild week.
And then in the only 5 we agree on, we managed to pick the same lock on one of those 5. So go figure.
Well, you know, I looked at that Tampa-New England just like, this is just too obvious, right? This just feels like a cookie. I hate to say it.
It kind of, but both of them are coming off L's, so you get the whole week.
But
of
I think
build
New
up
England's going to come off a lot more L's this year than I think the Tampa is.
Well, sure, but I think we all were kind of thinking when we saw this on the schedule of Belichick versus Brady, Belichick's going to have some devious plan and they're going to but to believe in that, I think we would have had to have seen New England kind of look. Like, kind of look the part leading up to this game, and just the Patriots just haven't looked the part. They don't look like they're
they
a
like
team
you
that's...
said, they don't have the horses, and that's exactly what it is for this game. If this was, the Belichick defenses of, the Belichick defenses that carried Tom Brady to all those Super Bowl wins, it'd be a different story, but this isn't.
Willie McGinnis is now walking through that door.
No.
Mike Vrabel is not walking through that door. Yeah. Ty Law is not walking through that door. No.
None of those guys. None of those guys are showing up for this game. Rod Ninkovich. No. None of them.
So, yeah. It did seem obvious after a while, but even then, after making the pick, after locking it up, I don't know if you agree with me or not, I'm still kind of scared for tomorrow night because Belichick is the evil genius.
They would – okay. They'd have to hurt him. That's it, right? Like, I mean, if they go galooly on him, you know, and somebody just runs out
why?
There.
Why me?
You know, if anybody gets that reference, you're way too old. Go to bed.
Or you've been watching old documentaries or something.
Yeah, but that's – I figure about the only way. They've got to send the goon. Like, Belichick's going to have to put, like, the 53rd man on the roster, you know? He's going to have to send Ed Neely out there.
The hockey fight?
Yeah, you know, he's going to send Ed Neely out there. He's got six fouls to give. Jack Haley, Ed Neely, that's 12 fouls right there. Just start taking cheap shots at Brady. You left me, huh? Well, watch this, you know?
Feels like he can send Bob Probert out there, except he's no longer
with
us.
That's right. Guy's just diving at his knees.
not hurt him, but yes, I agree that what I'm afraid of is Belichick finding something defensively to create enough pressure to frustrate and fluster and knock around Brady and maybe hurt him. Yes, but more.
Yeah, see if
more
he sends
so
anything.
Just fluster him is what I'm afraid
of. He's going to have to send some exotic stuff after him, and we're going to have to see some sellouts. I mean, completely sellout blitzes, I think, if they're going to have any chance of flustering Brady, you know. And you know what? Maybe you do try to play the mind game with him. Send a corner off the blitz and just, you know, put that helmet right into his ribs. I'm just saying.
Because that might be the play that flusters him the most. And if anyone knows which one of those blitzes flusters Brady the most, it would be Belichick. So
this is the kind of game Brady should be glad it's not Buddy Ryan is the coach he's going up against. Because then I'd be worried. I don't necessarily know about Belichick and being like a dirty defensive coach. I don't think he's ever earned any kind of reputation for that. But if you're going to do dirty, you're going to do someone dirty, you got to do Brady dirty, right?
Football fans announcing for one night only the new assistant coach for the Patriots, Greg Williams.
Dollar bills.
He just goes out
there making it rain. Making it rain in the locker room, anybody who wants it. let Brady get his 5-minute standing ovation and then send somebody out there with a spatula to scrape him off the turf once the game starts. That's all I can think of. That's the only way I think this goes off the rails for Tampa Bay in this game. They're just too loaded. Even with the injuries, they're loaded. It's like, no Rob Gronkowski. Oh, wait, we still have O.J. Howard and Cameron Brate.
Yeah, they're not lacking for weapons.
Yeah. And I think Brady's more – got more control over who can embarrass who in this game. Like, Belichick can't do it by being the coach. He can't just burn a hole through Tom Brady with laser vision. But Brady can affect the outcome of this game, I think, more than Belichick can. I think Brady's highly motivated.
All the father and sonning examples that I like to use, you got Belichick and Brady with the father sonning, but I'm going with Brady looking over at Matt Jones and saying, son, ain't no way in fucking hell coming up in here and letting you embarrass me.
Watch how this is done.
Here, watch this. Watch the master show you how this thing is done. Yeah.
Hey, you know what? And maybe Mac Jones steps up. Maybe. I'm not banking on it.
He also doesn't have the horses. He's not going to step up because who's he going to throw it to?
Oof, it's not pretty.
15 targets for Jacoby Myers? I don't know if that's going to get
it done. We know that this is the Bills division probably for a while now. I mean, they're going to have a stranglehold on this thing for a little while. You got to figure, you know, the Dolphins, you don't know what to make out of them. They don't even want their quarterback that they drafted fifth overall.
I was just about to say, they don't know who their quarterback is.
Right. You know, the Jets are trash. and the Patriots are on their way to being trash. So, yeah, this is not a good spot for New England. It's going to take a Herculean effort, I think, for them to keep this under 7.
Yeah, obviously I concur with you. We both locked it up, but even still, I'm a little concerned.
This week is. Well, Jesus, we disagree on 10 out of 15 games. That is a huge number.
I just kept counting, and I was like, "Oh my god, that one!"
And then
that
you know
one,
what? And
that
we're
one,
both looking at these, and we're both looking at some of these games, going, "Oh yeah, you gave me some gimmies too." I know you're looking at some of these matchups that I picked, and you're like, "Nope, that one's mine." And I'm looking at some of the ones you picked, and I'm like, "Nope, that one's mine."
Do I think you gave me any gimmies? Let me look.
I think you thought that on Green Bay with me taking Pittsburgh.
Okay, yeah, that's
and
okay,
Denver,
that one.
I don't think
yes.
you like Denver.
Yeah, well, but
and I'm
but
looking
it's not
at
like
you
a...
going, like, you took the Eagles, you took the Texans. I'm like, okay.
Yeah.
You know?
It's not like I think Baltimore's going to win by like 10 points or anything. I just think they're the better team, you know.
Right,
but,
and then there's some games that we disagree on, and it's like, if you got a clue, good luck. The one I thought you were going to lock up was Miami. You trashed the Colts so hard.
I did.
You talked that one up so much, I was waiting for the lock to come out. Like Washington, Atlanta, you have any clue? I have no clue.
Bears, Lions? No clue. No idea.
All I know is you cannot, in 2021, rush for more than you throw.
Nah.
That is...
What other city is Matt Nagy still employed? Only with Virginia McCaskey. The only reason he's still employed.
Yeah, because if you have some unwritten edict where you just won't fire a coach midseason, what more do you need to see?
That's the only thing.
I mean,
that's
Matt
the only
Nagy,
reason.
He gave up the play calling duties last year. The Bears make the playoffs because they go on that run late. And look, and then he's like, no, I got this. I'm setting football back to the 1930s.
Lord.
We're going to have who's going to start tomorrow? Red Grange?
The ghost of Red Grange. Oh,
if anybody gets that too, go to bed.
As a Bears fan, I was so embarrassed by last week. So embarrassed.
I mean, you were Captain Kool-Aid last week. You were sure. You had
I warned
OBJ
all of y'all.
Is gonna play.
I'm not rational.
OBJ is going to play. He's trash. Justin Fields is the savior. You had your cool in the gang. You had everything last week, and you got that.
And I told all of y'all before, I don't know what I'm talking about. It's the Bears. I'm not rational when it comes to the Bears.
And the Bears didn't even half-ass that game. They whole-assed that game. That was the whole ass. That was just ass.
The whole thing was ass. That's pretty much what they played like. And then I jump back on them and pick them again anyway this week, because who knows.
But it's the Lions. Who knows what you're going to get out of them? Other than they're going to try really, really hard.
Going to bite your kneecaps off.
But I am in a spot where I had to take Jared Goff over Justin Fields.
Well, do you want Justin Fields after that effort last week? Who's doing that? Only me.
Man. I'm telling you, I would have had him inactive the first run here. This probably should have been his first start this week. I would have not started him. I would have just had him inactive. Go Dalton, go Foles. If you've got a plan in place, don't subject him to that. Because that is not – do you even watch that tape if you're the Bears? I just burn it. Just burn all of it.
I wouldn't want to watch it, that's for sure. No, whatever I think of Nagy, he definitely did not want to use Fields in that spot. It was because Dalton got hurt. But yep. To your point, why is Fields the number two? If he's that not ready, if he's so not ready that he can't beat Red Rifle out, then why is he your number two? Just make him your number three and have him hold the clipboard and study. Then
I would have let Foles start there and then sprinkle in some Fields for the change of pace or to get some looks. I think it was – I saw what they were trying to do early, you know, with Dalton, and then they'd bring in Fields and give him a couple of plays or give him a drive, you know. And I'm not opposed to teams doing it that way. Do I think it's stupid? Yeah. I wouldn't do it. I'd just be like, you know, this is my guy. Now, if it's something where it's a package, you know, like they did with Lance when he scored that touchdown on the goal line and the Packers had no clue, even though you just had to know that was going to be the play, but okay. He just walked right in, you know, because they were, you're not accounting for the fact you think Jimmy G's back there. He's not going to really bust off and really run one in, you know, or have a designed run for Jimmy G. So, the Packers got caught their pants down right there right before halftime, and it worked for the Niners, and it kind of helped get them back in the game because the Packers were in control. I don't see any of that from this Bears offense. I mean, 91 yards passing per game through three games it makes me almost wonder what the next highest is from there because it's got to be almost double.
Well, I guess
it's about like bad passing offenses so far, right? Because they're at 91. So who are really? I'm just trying to look through these matchups here and find. You know, here it is. Well, it's the Giants. They're at 113. Whoa.
Danny Dimes, baby.
Oh wait, no, that's the Saints' offense.
Oh.
It's at 113.
Oh yeah, because some of those Jameis games. Oh
yeah. So that's the Saints. The Saints have the second worst passing offense in the league. They have also run for more yards than they've thrown. Ooh.
Oh.
Oh.
Yeah, New Orleans 31. That's there they are.
That's not good.
Yeah, but that I can't remember looking at
the Giants line, and then I was like, wait, that's the Saints.
Yeah. Yeah, because even in his victory, Jameis, you know, with the five touchdowns, only threw for like 5 yards. So,
right. Even last week, he didn't throw for much against New England. Didn't have to.
Yeah, well, he couldn't. I was like I said, I was watching that game. He was throwing up some of those crazy balls. Like, what? Why are you putting it there? So.
But the difference is the Saints are a quality franchise.
They are. They can find a way.
They find a way. They have a good defense. And they have Alvin Kamara. They actually have things that can kind of overcome that. Plus, Jameis Winston, I think, has like 7 touchdown or 8 touchdown passes, even with those paltry numbers.
Like I've been saying, that situation in Chicago is unique because I think under any other situation, any other city, that Nagy's not there anymore. So we would have a new regime. We would have a better idea of what the direction is, who the new offensive guru that they would bring in. This is something like that can't stand. And in any other, you know, maybe Jacksonville, they would allow it because they don't care. But anywhere else, this kind of football, it's instant firing, immediate. Like, instantly, get out. We don't need that. I think
yeah,
only
my,
Chicago.
I don't know if you saw the Dan Orlovsky bit about just trashing, forget what network he's on, but just absolutely trashing Matt Nagy. Now, you have reached the nadir of your career as a coach when you're getting trashed by Dan Orlovsky. Right? The dude who just stepped out of the back of the end zone.
Yes.
For the winless Lions team. And that dude's calling for your head. That guy.
And you know you stink when the dregs of random Allen quarterbacks start coming on television and telling you how terrible you are. Big Ben is next.
Immediately, like canned after the game. Like he shouldn't have been on the plane ride home.
And if the Steelers keep this up, Big Ben is going to be the next one that, you know, all these terrible quarterbacks get on the air and start talking trash about because they look so inept. They look like last year. They look just
broken.
Like last year. Right.
Although that was the Ravens that we said their offense was broken, but we had some questions about that Steelers offense several times.
We knew they were broken before they lost the game because we could see
the way they were
just more and more ineffective every week. Every game they got less and less productive and potent until they just petered out in that playoff game. And
yeah.
They still haven't recovered.
I'm giving them one more shot. I this is it. I don't think I had them. Don't think I had them in the playoffs this year. I'm going back to my preseason picks here. I had the Steelers finishing third. I had Browns, Ravens, Steelers, Bengals. I might have had that bottom order wrong. You got the Bengals are sitting at 3-1. That now, is it going to last? Probably not. But at least you can see improvement.
Oh, certainly. And you know, like I said, I can see the outline of a real quarterback in Joe Burrow.
And they play
a lot of guys
Packers,
I can't say that about.
They get the Packers next week. And for the Packers' sake, please, please, please hope that Kevin King is injured for that matchup. Because you know Cincinnati's going to be trying to figure out a way to get Jamar Chase on Kevin King.
Yeah, that combo, you called it early. That might be the new Blake to Pickens.
It's Blake to Pickens. That's the new one. They did it again in that Pittsburgh game. He was finding them. They just wouldn't cover that guy.
They clearly got a connection. So.
You usually,
always good.
You see that sometimes, right? You get these younger guys usually, or that you know, they get this top rookie. And you were talking about, oh, he looked terrible in the preseason. Well, maybe he's just not a practice guy.
Maybe.
You know, look at Hollywood Brown.
The reason ate at me was because that's my fantasy guy, and I lost my game.
Did you lose?
I did. He catches a couple of those touchdowns, and I believe I win, but
didn't
work out
for
me.
Two of them on the ground, and they weren't like contested. These were wide open touchdowns.
Those highlights I saw, like no one. Him and he just kept dropping.
That was like DeAndre Swift dropping that one against the Bears last year.
Oh man, wide open.
Hey, remember that at the end of that game?
Oh,
was that week one?
Walking into the end zone.
Oh my God. Catches the ball, turn around in the end zone.
Maybe there's something about the lights in the stadium in Detroit.
Start running with them. Maybe. We're on to something here.
Terrible lighting. Inside the Lions Stadium.
Oh, that was a long show. It was good. It was a football party.
We got everything out. We got our week 3 recap. We got our week 4 picks and gave you a little more in the after show as well. But
can't just end the show cold. It's very rare that we can just go, oh, that's it. Live show's over. Good night, everybody.
Sometimes one of us is that tired. And
yeah, well, it's 11:22. Central time here, and today was my first day back at work. So, yeah, I was up at 6 a.m. today. I'm a little beat.
Well, I thought I was going to have to be the one to call it as soon as the show was over because I've been up since 3. You ever have one of those days where you wake up at 3 and you can't go back to sleep?
Not often, but I've had them.
Yeah.
You know,
I don't have them often either, but I had it.
Yeah, it's usually one of those where you wake up and then you got to get out of bed because you got to go to the bathroom. And then you lay down and you're like, oh, crap. So you grab the phone because you think, I'll just watch some videos or listen to some music. And the next thing, then you get caught in like the YouTube rabbit hole.
Mm-hmm.
And then next thing you know, it's 5:30 and you're like, well, I got to be up in an hour.
Well, I don't have a phone with me when I sleep, but it was one of those where I wake up at 3 and then, you know, your mind just starts racing through every single thing in the world on your mind. And the next thing I knew it was 4 and I fell back asleep. And I was like, I'm going to get up now because I'm clearly not going to fall back asleep. So I just got up. So I've been up since 3 and
well, you win.
And I'm stunned that I held up through the show as well as I did. I thought I was going to completely blank out and have total mind fart. Maybe I did with my picks. I don't know, but I'm here and then coming down to the end of this one. But I did definitely want to talk about what's coming up in the next couple of weeks for our show because I got another trip coming next weekend. So this is where we figure out our plans for the next couple of weeks. Are you available to do our football party next Friday?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it just has to be. Yeah, 9 o'clock still works. I'll be home in time.
Okay, and if, you know, something's happening and you get delayed, of course, let me know, and I can either push the show time back or start the show and do
much rather just do 9, because I can't do it. 10 o'clock on a Friday night gets hard for me, because Saturday is – that Thursday, Friday, sure. Saturday is my worst – like the worst part of my work week. So I'd much rather just be, you know, in and out, done by 11.
Right.
Than to try to do a show at 10, and then I'm up till, yeah, and it's 12 o'clock, and it's like, oh, God, I got to be up at 6 o'clock on Saturday. No, I'm old, man. I can't do that.
I can
do Friday.
Okay. So because we fly out Saturday morning for our next trip. So.
Okay. So does that mean you're back then for the 16th? Or?
Okay, so for that, we do fly home that Saturday morning. But
okay.
Then I'm thinking about, you know, land here, get home in the afternoon, and unwind. I've been traveling that day, and now I got to sit down and try to, you know, get ready for the show. And I don't know if I want to do that. So I think I'd rather let you and the Cute Factors just have another hospital takeover,
if that's
possible.
We'll see. We'll see.
Okay.
That was something.
That was a thing.
We'll see how that would go a second time. I have a feeling they might be a little bit more loose, which I don't know if that's a good thing or not. So
need a wrangler. You need somebody there to keep them in one place.
Man.
They want to run off during the show.
Yeah, we can. We'll play that one by ear.
Okay. I probably can do the show. It's just that,
yeah.
You know.
Either that, or we can just do like an abridged show. You know, we don't have to make it a full, like, a 2-hour thing with the big huge recap and all. We can figure out a way,
yeah.
I think, to get it in like efficiently.
Yeah, I definitely would have to be a 1 hour, because I wouldn't be able to recap, because that whole week I would be on the cruise, so I wouldn't be able to. I probably won't be able to watch any games. I don't know, but I probably wouldn't be able to.
Yeah, I wouldn't think so. So that would that means you would be expected then to get home and then, like, research everything.
And catch
you
up with everything.
So either way, you got to make your picks.
Either way, I got to make my picks, but definitely can't do a recap, because I can't, you know, I don't know anything, what's going on. I have nothing to recap. So that's the next couple weeks. Is next week will be the big
Friday
2-hour football party on Friday night. That'd be the 8th of October.
It is the 8th. That's correct.
At 9 o'clock Central, and the week after that, probably going to wind up being a 1-hour just pick show only party that Saturday after I get back in town.
All right. Then we could do that like 9, or even if you feel better about doing like 10, if you wanted more time to make your picks, it's up to you.
Yeah, definitely play that part by ear too.
All right.
Everything's up in the air for that.
Right. Just as long as we get the picks in, you know, and I don't have to try to wrangle the kids. I'd be more than happy to invite them on the show though.
Sure.
Because we did that show, that week I did the show with them, we did the show at 8.
Right.
So we actually did the early show that week. That was crazy.
Quote-unquote early, we're, you know, still after dinner time.
Yeah, well, I get home from work at 7, so it made sense for me.
And this cruise coming up, this is going to be, I don't think you've been looking at any of my Facebook posts about it, but... So it's going to be on, it's going to be Virgin Voyages, you know, the Richard Branson, Mr. Virgin guy. He started the cruise line because, you know, that's what these rich guys do. They take off in spaceships and go to space and start cruise lines and start all these other businesses and whatnot. So this thing, it looks like it's going to be something more than a cruise. I'm trying to figure a diplomatic way of putting it. Like some of the things that they're going to have, presentations, their shows are going to be real. It almost looks like, in a way, it looks like Vegas on a boat. It's going to be really, you know, like circus type shows. It's going to be I think maybe sensual type shows and whatnot. And then they put out this. I'm going to have to pull this up and read it to you because it's just so odd. And got me a little frightened, to be honest. So I'm on the app for Virgin Voyages and going through every night of our cruise and what they got planned. So then one of the nights, they call it Scarlet Night. And if you know the Virgin logo, it's red with the white lettering. So Scarlet is sort of their thing, red, whatever. And they're, one of the nights they call it Scarlet Night, and they wanted to let everybody know that it's going to be really sensual and intimate, and there's going to be some sort of like presentation, the language that they use. So this is what they put in the app for their Scarlet Night, and tell me this doesn't sound like a swinger ship. This is the language that they used. Consent language. How we play hard at Virgin Voyages. Please be aware this is an intimate experience where we have fun together by respecting and trusting one another. We are dedicated to providing freedom from judgment, fear, and all forms of discrimination. We encourage everyone to explore freely and connect in this playful environment. But you should always... But you should always...
You went to Epstein's Island?
But you should always feel empowered to communicate what you want or don't want to do. Consent is everything, on and off the dance floor. Always ask before a physical interaction. And be sure to get a clear, definite yes before getting intimate. And remember, it's perfectly okay to say no. Consent is simple. The deeper we feel, the more playful we become. The more you give, the more effort you put in, the better the experience guaranteed. So go on, lean in, be prepared to take part. So to put it simply, participate, respect all the human beings in the room. Remember, consent is the name of the game, and relish being the best version of yourself.
This can only happen in international waters, I'm guessing.
And I'm telling you, I read that, and there's only one sound that was going through my mind the entire time, and I was like, what are we about to get?
I'm thinking more Benny Hill. You're going to have people dressed up in bear costumes running around from door to door, going in one door and out the other like Benny Hill and Scooby-Doo. This is going to be, I can't wait to hear the stories on this one. This might rival my my massage with feet story.
I don't know.
I'm telling you, Epstein's Island, you're going to be stopping there.
It made me feel like this is basically going to be a swinger boat. It's going to be a bunch of guys with mustaches walking around.
It's the love boat already. Yeah. Better watch out for Brian McKinney and Dante Culpepper.
Oh, no.
They ask you, just say no.
If I see a double-sided dildo somewhere. Oh, and that reminds me. Apparently, my wife was reading about this boat. Apparently, there is going to be like a goodie bag or something in every room. And there's going to be some things in there. Maybe some vibrating things. So
obviously, calling this a virgin cruise is a play on words.
That's only virgin because of the brand name of the company. But
no, I know.
In every way, not looking like there's going to be too many virgins on this boat.
Okay, yeah. that was actually like their. Like legal disclaimer or what was did you have to sign a waiver?
It was just right there in the description of whatever Scarlet Night is. That's what Scarlet Night is, I guess.
Okay.
So whatever is going to happen not next week, but the week after that. That's what that's setting up to be. Is going to be 5 days of possible, I don't know, debauchery or so. I don't know. All I know is there's free Wi-Fi as part of this cruise, and I got a feeling I'm going to be capturing some things with my
phone. Ah,
I'm kind of looking forward to it.
What they
forgot to tell you. I'm also kind of scared as hell.
Well, what they're not going to tell you is that you're just going to be watching Rutgers games.
No, not that Scarlet, no.
Oh, not those Scarlet Knights?
No, something totally different.
Sorry.
I don't think it has anything to do with Rutgers.
Okay.
All right, I guess we're done with on that note.
I'm done. That was interesting though. That was a healthy read.
This is what we're in for in a couple of weeks. So wish us luck and pray for us.
Definitely save those stories for the after show and make sure my kids aren't on the show.
Definitely. Definitely going to
tell us about the Scarlet Knights.
On the Virgin Voyages. On the boat is called the Scarlet Lady, so.
Okay. Was this a board game? Was this Clue? You missed the miss. You're gonna be on the Scarlet Lady, and then the other ship is the Professor Plum.
This is what we're getting into, so wish us luck. All right, once again, next week. Week 4 recap and week 5 picks, our big football party, Friday night, October
the
8th.
And then at the end of the thing, they'll be like, I think it's Dre in the ballroom with the double ender.
Oh, no.
Just like Clue.
No, it would not
with
be
Brian
Dre.
McKinney.
It would definitely not be Dre with a double ender. If
Dr.
Dre was
Dre
a bachelor.
MD.
If Dre was a bachelor, it might be, but if Dre was a bachelor, he wouldn't be on this boat.
Hey, your wife? You know, anything goes.
No. No. Won't be her either. Big, both of us, we were joking about that. It's going to wind up, we're thinking about, you know, whatever the Scarlet Knight is. I read that description. We both read the description. We look at each other. We're like, what the hell is this? And then she goes, so you want to go? And I go, yeah, I kind of want to see what the hell, what this is all about. So
I have to find the gal who's hot for you at my wedding and send her on the boat.
But we're joking. It's probably going to be, you know, 1,000 of us going to whatever this thing is, looking around at each other.
What the hell do we do now?
Right. Watching two people walk around trying to get freaky with everybody.
Wait, you like Rutgers too?
I'm a big Scarlet Knight fan.
You
totally
need to go and get yourself like a Rutgers hat and say that you thought, I thought I was here for Scarlet Knight's night.
No, Scarlet Knight without a K. Different night.
I'd be that guy.
You would. And there's probably a lot of guys that's going to be that guy on this particular trip. All right. We are obviously getting loopy, so we're going to get out of here now. Okay. He is Jay. I am Dre. This has been In Much Less Detail, the podcast. Thank all you crazy people for joining us. And we will be back next Friday night for our football party. We will talk to you then.